Can you imagine listening to a song that was comprised only of drums? Or just drums and bass? Without something over top, it just seems incomplete. That would be like, well, listening to radio with no alternative or community programming. That's why you have it tuned to 99.1 FM, CJAM, redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit. And listen online at cjam.ca.
JD's grandma, and you're listening to you talking to me.
It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
And welcome to the show. And it is the 100th You Talking to Me show here at CJAM. So it's kind of a special. And I have a number of guests on the show today. I wanted to bring past guests on the show to update us as to what's been happening with them since they've been on You Talking to Me. And some of them on You Talking to Me since the show's been at CJAM, and some prior, when it was only a podcast or on the station out in Las Vegas. And so it gives me great pleasure to have all these people back on the show and to kick things off. Avid podcaster turned radio host Lippo is here with me today, and he currently hosts Big JD and Lippo in the Morning here at CJAM, Thursdays at 8 a.m. I had him on You Talking to Me last year and invited him back today to update us on podcasting and how it's evolved. And so since he was going to be on the show anyway, I figured why not have him on for the whole special, You Talking to Me's 100th CJAM special. Lippo, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show, Big JD. It's an honor to be here.
My pleasure.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Now, we've been doing this for a long time, you and I, podcasting. And
talking in front of the microphones.
It's been a while. Eight years maybe?
October 2005, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. So what is that in...
Let's do the math.
2005, did you say?
Yeah, so it'd be 7 years. Yeah. Seven years, okay. In October, it'll be 7 years, yes.
Wow. There's another milestone. What are we going to do on our seven-year anniversary?
I think we should go for dinner.
Yeah. Sure. And hold hands, go for a walk the river, all that kind of stuff. We'll videotape it.
And videotape in one hand and my hand in the other hand.
I can do it. And we'll air it as a video podcast.
Ooh, I don't know.
One thing I want to ask you about podcasting is, have video podcasts actually kind of taken over? Have podcasts moved, a podcast that was, say, audio, an audio show, moved to video? Because I know there are some that you get the audio podcast and the video podcast. Some of them have a dual video podcast because of the lower quality, which is, you know, quicker to download and that kind of thing. But have there been a surge maybe in video podcasts as opposed to what audio was?
I don't think there's a massive transition quite yet. I think the medium itself, audio podcasting, is still an extremely portable medium, and a lot of people like to do it while they're working. If they have a mundane job, if they can just listen to something in the background, or of course there's a drive into work, drive home, it's still something that, you know, they just got on their phone or their device that they're using, they can plug it into the radio or whatever, and it's still very portable, which makes the medium extremely popular. Whereas video, it demands a little more of your attention, so video podcasts can only be consumed in a limited number of situations. You can watch it in your living room if you have that set up in your living room with either an Apple TV or Roku box or one of those devices doing that, or you can be watching it like on an iPad or something else like that. You have to be in a certain situation where your attention is, you know, squarely on the device that you're holding or your television set. So that's why I don't think the transition has been quite as good as it could be, or as mainstream as it can, or as its potential has anyway.
Right. The name of the game really with podcasting is on the go, really. So
Yes, it's on the go for sure. And there's many advantages to a video podcast for sure. And I myself listen to a number of podcasts that are available as a video podcast, but I just because of my situation, I choose to listen to the audio version of it.
Right. And then again, if somebody likes a particular video podcast and just wants to listen to the audio, I suppose you could, you know, have that on your device and just listen rather than watching it. I mean, you could still have your MP3 player or whatnot in your pocket and listen to the show while you're working, I guess.
For sure, yeah.
And then watch it again later without the audio if you don't want to hear it again.
Because you know what they said.
That's right. And what about any particular new sites come up with shows or genres or things that you know you've been into lately? Is there anything in particular you might want to enlighten us about?
Not so much sites, but an app that I think is getting more and more popular, Stitcher, which we were right on as soon as they approached us, actually, that they wanted more content on their within their system.
And so, a couple of shows, don't we have? The Jabbercast is probably still on Stitcher, but Easy Mac Podcast,
Easy
right?
Mac yeah. Podcast as well, yeah. And now they do all, like they do video, audio, and they also do live radio. Mm-hmm. So there's a large amount of content they offer people. So it's, you don't necessarily have to do the subscribing kind of thing. You just pick favorites within the app and then they're delivered to you. You just choose them. It's kind of like on demand, basically.
And, yeah. And you can set those up to play back to back too, which is kind of neat about Stitcher, right?
Yeah. So you can play one podcast.
Make
right
your own playlist.
Yeah, make a playlist, whether you're listening to tech podcasts or entertainment based podcasts or whatever, and it'll just play one right after the other. So Stitcher is, for me, that's what I've been, you know, that's the way I've been going as far as listening or digesting my podcasts. Even though Apple just came out with their new podcast app, which I'm not sure if that's going to negate the necessity to have people subscribe to podcasts within iTunes, which, you know, iTunes is a behemoth that everybody kind of knows about what iTunes is. So it'll be interesting to see if that app takes off, and it'll also be interesting to see if Apple gives podcasts the boot out of iTunes.
And is that audio, video? What is that?
No, that's just audio, yeah. The podcast app just lets you subscribe to audio podcasts. I mean, they may have plans in the future to do video, but right now it's really basic. And they've been getting a lot of flack for that app just because of the user interface that's involved with it. It's kind of interesting where they went with that, because it was the interface was really not, didn't really add much to the user mm-hmm. experience, which is very un-Apple-like.
Because I used, I still do, my reason for the lack of knowledge on that particular app is because I use the iTunes store basically on, you know, the iPhone to watch video podcasts. Mm. But that had always been pretty good and pretty quick and snappy, you know, listening even to, well, obviously to audio, but for the video sure. podcast, I was kind of surprised they came out with an actual app for it instead of, obviously there must be some other functionality, but I thought that was pretty convenient. And having the same place where you can purchase and whatnot as you could listen and watch podcasts.
Right. You know. Well, the only problem with the iTunes app on your device was that you could never subscribe. You always had to go.
Right, right.
You had to go look for it.
Yeah, and that's what I always did. And, you know, again, never really subscribed to them just because it was always right there to listen to a show or listen to something when I crash, you know what I mean? And then have to subscribe and have to have them download, take up space, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure,
yeah, wait just, for them, really.
It's a matter of seconds, really. How many seconds can we save is really what it all boils down to.
And something, you haven't really been podcasting so much lately. I mean, you've been on the air, on the radio, mm-hmm. but what's any plans in the future? Anything in the works? Or
I'm sorry to say, but no, there is no plans in work. I'm just digging the audio or the radio gig that we got going on. And as far as podcasting goes, my podcast partner for the Easy Mac podcast, he got like really, really busy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and then...
those kind of people you kick to the curb.
Yeah, I really should kick them to the curb.
Yeah, absolutely. You kick them right now. Go ahead.
That's Easy Mac Jeff, by the way. You know where you are if you're listening.
And you haven't been podcasting lately, really, but you have acquired some gear that's related to recording and that certainly could be used for podcasting. And I just want to ask you a little bit about some of the, you know, stuff that you, because I know you got the, what is it, the I/O for the iPad?
The Alesis I/O dock, yeah.
Yeah. We need to try that out sometime, I think.
Absolutely. I'm dying to try it out, actually. And I've used it in other applications. I'm in a band as well. So, I mean, anybody who listens to the morning show knows that we're music guys. Actually, some people think that we're doing a music show. Some people ask me, is that a music show? That's all you guys talk about is music on that show.
Although we may at some time in the near future, there's something in the works that we can't really divulge, but a music-related video podcast that I sure am looking forward to this thing coming to fruition at some point in time.
Some point in time, it should be cool.
It's right up our alley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, the IO dock is, it's basically you slip your iPad into it, and then whatever interface you want to use is based on whatever app you want to use. You can use GarageBand with it, sure, but there's a ton of other audio interface applications out there. There's the stuff that IK Multimedia makes, and there's the Animoog stuff.
Great for mobile recording.
It's awesome for mobile recording because you can use actual XLR, you know, unbalanced mics.
Yeah.
And
Pro Gear.
Pro Gear, Phantom Power if you need it for condenser mics and stuff like that. So.
It's nice. Is that the thing? Is that the one that you can, you know, have 10 of them linked together or whatnot, like for live? Is that the one that?
No, that's the Mackie 1608.
Oh, right, okay,
yes. And you can.
That's kind of neat too.
You can adjust the mix of your monitors right from your iPad. You can adjust
in
the mix of the
show situation.
The whole show. Yeah.
Right, and all the band members can have them and adjust to anything they want on the go, and that's cool.
Yeah. I can't hear my guitar. Turn it up.
And then another thing that's great for mobile recording and podcasting is I have a Zoom recorder. You have the MicroTrack.
Yes.
And those things are great and handy and record awesome.
Yeah, they have lots of flexibility, whether you stick in a small card or a big card, you can record in WAV and MP3 file formats. So yeah, those devices are nice to have as well, for sure.
So let's get on with today's show. We have a lot of guests to introduce. And are you a dancer at all?
I dance every day.
Not a peeler. I mean, do you dance like, did you dance at your wedding and that kind of thing? And
dance at my wedding? I dance every day.
Do you?
Oh, for sure.
No, you don't. In his underwear in the living room. But do you, slow dance kind of guy? Do you dance fast? Are you into that thing? I've never danced fast ever.
Oh, yeah.
Like a real regular dancing. Yeah. I'd love to see that sometime. A lot of people that I know that, you know, they dance and I'd love to see them dance. Because
you got to shake your booty.
It's weird for some reason. And I've, I slow dance on occasion. And have, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Never danced like, real.
I guess you're not known as a shy guy, but maybe you just don't have the confidence.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with that. But
do a 3-day workshop on dancing, and I think you'll have the chops.
My first guest for the 2009 season was Isabel Tatoy. Isabel's a belly and Hawaiian hula dancer. She travels providing entertainment in cities between Windsor and the Toronto area. And I think even further in Toronto, she's actually gone. And she does a lot of that stuff in senior homes and centers and things like that.
Oh, like recreation therapy.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. It's it's pretty cool. And she does a lot of shows. And she's added some new routines. And she also talks about an Arabic drum that she's now performing with, and she's doing, she was doing those kind of traditional dances and things like that, but now she's doing also like a rock 50s and 60s thing. So she wears those, what are those skirts called?
Bobbies,
all that stuff.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Poodle skirts? Is that what it's called?
Is it poodle skirt or poodle haircut maybe or something?
I don't know.
But anyway, yeah.
I'm too young for that.
Isabel Tatoy, back on the show.
Congratulations on your 100th show, Big JD.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to have you be a part of it.
Thank you.
It's great to have you back on to give us an update. I know you're heading into the neighborhood of a couple hundred shows that you've done as far as not only belly dancing, but you've added some other things to your repertoire now.
Oh, absolutely. I have a whole new show, and it's really going good. I've actually done 22 shows since last year, and it's a rock 50s to 60s show, and I started that in April, the early part of April of 2011, and it's a lot of fun. It's, the old, you wear the poodle skirt with the crinoline underneath and the big 50s black sequin bow, and I've got the dancing shoes and the striped top and the whole costume is going with that, and of course the music. I do a lot of the big band tunes from Duke Ellington, Tommy Dorsey, the older people really relate to that, and then there's Bill Haley and the Comets and the Beach Boys and Chuck Berry, Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard, all of those, And there's a really nice portion of the show where I just get into those 50s dances, 50s, 60s dances, where, you know, the hitchhike and the twist and the monkey and the bop, hula hoop contest to rock around the clock. And oddly enough, the show opens with the theme song to the movie Grease, you know, the one with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. You're the One That I Love. Of course, that movie was about the 50s. So it's a really fun show, and it's going really well.
Yeah, that's great. And that's got to be, that's a quite different kind of than what you've been doing. And that's got to be a lot of fun for you.
Yeah, it's absolutely different. My boyfriend actually said, why don't you do a Rock 50 show? Do something different. And I said, oh, I could never do that. And he said, oh, yeah, you could. And like a year later, almost a year later, a little over a year, actually, doing a lot of them. I haven't had a failure yet. The shows are really quite successful.
Yeah, because I know you were doing the traditional belly dancing, you were doing the Hawaiian luau's, and then you at some point got into doing some stuff with the cane.
Yeah, I was dancing with a cane, the belly dancing. It was an Egyptian dance, and actually I'm dancing with two canes now. So I've added some new props. I've got all new costumes to all the shows, which are belly dancing, Hawaiian luau, and of course the Rock 50s, which is the newer one. So I've added some new costumes in each category, some new songs, some new routines, and some new little instruments. As a matter of fact, I'm doing a Rock 50s this September 13th at Seasons in Amherstburg. They're having their 5-year anniversary birthday party. So I'm going to go in there and put on a 45-minute show for them.
Oh, that's great.
And that should be fun, yeah. Yeah.
And you mentioned new instruments. Tell me a little bit about that. You're playing a new drum.
Yeah, I'm playing an Arabic Dumbek drum. Now, I had it before. I think when we were talking, I might have had that drum, but I wasn't practicing it too much, and I really wasn't doing too much with it. But I have been practicing it a lot now, and so I only play the drum during the belly dancing show because, you know, it kind of, that's what it is, you know, Arabic Dumbek drum, belly dancing. And I play it to a song, and I also solo it where I have no music and I just drum.
Oh, wow.
And I've done that once already, and it went over really well, so I know I can do it again. So I almost sold that drum on eBay, too. I had it up for sale on eBay, and then I thought, you know, because I hadn't been practicing it, and I thought, you know, let me give that another shot. And I went on it, and I thought, no, I can do something with this. So I'm glad I never sold it.
Yeah, and when I mentioned the cane, for some reason, I was thinking you were doing show tunes, but that might be another thing for you, doing show tunes.
The show tune was kind of the cabaret. I was kind of doing a cabaret thing with the cane. It was kind of a silly little fun thing. And then I thought, no, I want to stick to tradition. So I was doing an authentic Rax El Asai, which is a stick dance, which goes back to the traditional Egyptian dance and the moves that go with that. And I like it a lot better. It's got the Saidi beat, which is actually an Arabic rhythm of sorts, and it's really a nice tune. So, but I'm dancing now with the two canes, you know.
Okay, and now with branching out and doing the rock and roll thing that you thought you wouldn't do, are you considering doing some other things? Are there other things in the works, possibly?
You know, I don't think there's anything else I could do. I do have a kind of a fusion show, and by fusion I mean everything else, where I do a lot of percussion instruments, and I do, you know, I have a different sort of costume, and I play the maracas, and I would play the Arabic Dumbek drum there, and I play the finger cymbals, and the Egyptian tambourine, and the Remo tambourine, and a lighted tambourine, and it's everything else that I wouldn't normally do in any of these other shows, sort of, and that's fun too. I actually did that last year at the Old Sandwich Town Fest. I did a part Hawaiian luau and a part fusion where I changed costume and went into this kind of thing. But mainly, I think I have three shows, and I'm still going strong. I'm still able to do them, you know.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Speaking of going strong, your website's going strong. You got lots of new stuff up there. Whole new site, actually.
I do. You know, there's a lot of stuff in there in each section, and a lot of photographs and some videos, and it's a contact form so that if you want to contact me, and explains everything. You can go on that site and see what the show is going to look like. All the shows I've done, the whole schedule, you know, all those 200 shows, actually 185 to date, and by the end of the year so far booked would be 200. It's averaging about 45 a year. I've been doing this since 2008, and that's 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of spurts where I see, you know, shows consecutively every day, sometimes more than one a day, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, those are on tours where I, and I haven't done a tour this year. I'm going to try to plan one for fall, another Toronto to Cobourg, where I do the 15 shows in 10 days sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would do two shows a day, because to just do one a day doesn't resonate. You're there, you might as well do two. I book them usually successively, you know, maybe an hour in between so I can get from one little town to the next. In town, I don't really get that much chance to do two shows a day because everybody has a certain day they want to book, and somehow it isn't always the same day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Rarely.
Even a CJM radio interview on the website.
Yes, it
That's
is.
Awesome.
I have that on there. I finally got that up on there, yeah.
Give us your website address.
Okay, it's Isabel Tatoy, Belly Dance and Luau's .weebly.com. And the spelling of my name is Isabel. Tatoiu.
Site looks fantastic, and wish you the best,
you know, in
future success with dancing. And again, it's great to have you on the special here.
Well, thanks, Big JD, and I'm glad that you included me in this 100th anniversary show of yours. I'm honored to be a part of it.
Cool. Thanks for being on. All right, my next guest deals pretty much exclusively with a band that we all know and enjoy and have enjoyed for many years, Thin Lizzy.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And Ronnie Atkins, last on the show in 2009. And she's the official webmaster and director for the Thin Lizzy MySpace website, a 21 Guns MySpace page, mm-hmm. which is another band of Scott Gorham. She works closely with the management and also Lizzy guitar Scott Gorham. She handles a Facebook page now as well. Mm-hmm. She's progressed to that. You know what I mean?
Progressed to Facebook.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is these days. Because
is it progress or digress?
No, I would say progress to Facebook from something like MySpace, because
yes.
MySpace is not...
No, it's
you know what I mean?
No.
But people still have to have that. And then there's Reverb Nation, but I don't think she handles Reverb Nation. That might be something more closely related to management, or you know what I mean?
Well, it's just a way for people to buy and listen to your music and to get tickets for your shows and stuff like that, right?
And Reverb Nation also, I believe, is you know, a big promotion thing in that.
Yeah,
so I don't know how big on that Thin Lizzy is, because I mean I don't necessarily maybe need Reverb Nation, you know what I mean?
Or they need somebody in every town. They need somebody, right? In every town there's a promoter that promotes for, you know, all the venues that are.
But I just mean promoting your band itself. Like you know, there's a lot of indie artists and things like that are on Reverb Nation.
Absolutely.
But Reverb Nation is a big deal,
and so is Thin Lizzy.
And so is Thin Lizzy, yeah. So she's been contributing also to a new book that's about to be released. I think it's available for pre-release at Amazon. So,
is it a tell-all?
Yeah, may or may not be. I suppose with a pre-order, you'd be able to check out some pages maybe on Amazon.
Yeah, so read what's inside, yeah. Now, her name's Ronnie?
Her name's Ronnie.
That's
Ronson Atkins.
It's not short for Veronica? Or
Ronson.
Ronson.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the lighter.
No, that's Ron Coe.
Lighter fluid, Ronson.
Oh, okay. And so she's here to update us on what's happening there and with the band. So it's great to have you back on the show, Ronnie.
Thanks, JD.
Maybe you can first start by telling us what's up with Thin Lizzy now.
Actually, really exciting news with Thin Lizzy at the moment. During June, they actually did a tour with Guns N' Roses. They were the opening act for some shows in Ireland and England. And during some of the breaks there, they were working on some demos because they've all decided to work on some new material and actually put out new Thin Lizzy material, which will be the first new material since 1983.
Wow.
So it's really pretty exciting stuff. And just this past week, they've kind of finished up their demos because they're up in the studio in Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
And they've finally, like I said, they've been all writing together. Because the thing about the band as well is that now there's so many writers, like Scott Gorham and Brian Downey and Darren Wharton, who are the original members of Thin Lizzy, always wrote. But now they have three other guys in the band that also write too. So when it comes to writing songs, it's really kind of exciting that all six of them are kind of getting involved in the whole thing.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So, like I said, this last week, they've been in a studio in Newcastle and finished up their demos. And today I just found out that they're actually booked into a studio to record their new material. And they have, they're just working on getting a producer. And I think the producer might be pretty exciting, and I don't think I can actually say who it is yet.
Okay, I was just going to ask.
It's going to be someone pretty well known, but right. I don't think they've hammered that one down, so I don't want that cat out of the bag until it's actually confirmed.
All right, cool. That'll be the next update.
Mm-hmm. And they're actually, they play tomorrow night in Carlisle in England, mm-hmm. and then they play on Saturday night in Belfast at the Balsamic Festival, and then that's them done touring until November, and they go back out in Europe in November. But between now and then is when they're going to record the new material. So we're very pumped about that.
Yeah, very cool. And tell me about the newest member in the band now.
Well, last time we spoke, Vivian Campbell was in the band, mm-hmm. and he had to go back to Def Leppard. So in the meantime, they got Richard Fortus in. And Richard Fortus is actually a guitarist from Guns N' Roses.
Right.
So then Guns N' Roses went back out on the road, so he had to go back to Guns N' Roses. So then, Damon Johnson, he was on a break from Alice Cooper's band, and Damon is an absolutely incredible guitarist, and he's also a huge Thin Lizzy fan, and we're really very, very excited because Damon has basically decided to join the band full-time. Scott asked him to come on board full-time, and it's just, you know, Damon just thinks it's his dream come true. And
Alice Cooper out of luck now with the guitar player?
Well, you know what, Damon spoke to Alice about it. Mm-hmm. And Alice knows just what a huge Lizzy fan he is. So he was just all for it. He said, you know what, it's what make you happy. You know, he's obviously upset to lose him because he's just such a fab guitarist. And right. He's great. He's got an incredible stage presence. So, mm-hmm. And him and Scott together, I mean, it's just like the magic circle has just come back to life. It's just wonderful to see the two of them working together. They just feed off of each other. Makes cool. It a really exciting show.
And tell me what's happening with any of the websites.
We have our webpage, thinlizzyband.com. We actually have two Facebook pages.
Have you been posting some new video or anything?
I've been posting on our Facebook pages. I like to kind of go through YouTube and find some stuff. I'm sure you know it's kind of hard to find some good YouTube stuff from people posting things off their phone, but lately we found a couple of great clips from some of the European shows. They just played in Poland and a big festival out there, and I've just posted up some great clips from that show. But I'm excited about our Facebook page. We're almost up to 300,000 likes, so it's coming along nicely.
Wow, that's great. Maybe you could tell listeners what the website that you take care of or the Facebook page and MySpace, because I know there's a few out there and we want to make sure they get the right ones.
Well, our biggest Facebook page is just basically called Thin Lizzy Official. Mm-hmm. We kind of have a backup page as well, and it's kind of thin-lizzy-official, and that really is just, it's the exact same stuff that we put on our Facebook page. I update both of them.
Right.
And we do still have a MySpace page. You know, MySpace is kind of definitely gone by the wayside compared to Facebook, but yeah. We do still keep a presence on MySpace, and that's Thin Lizzy Now on MySpace.
Anything further going on with Scott as far as 21 Guns or side project?
Well, you know, and it's really a shame because I had just about finished recording all of this stuff for 21 Guns. But just, you know, Thin Lizzy has just really kind of taken over because I've just been doing so much lately, touring so much, you know, trying to put new material together. Mm-hmm. You just haven't had the time to do 21 Guns. I mean, he still thinks it's going to happen, and his partner in the band, Life, still wants it to happen. Mm-hmm. But you know, all the guys kind of have projects. I mean, Ricky, he also has a solo career. He's recorded some stuff recently. Damon has another band called Brother Keen that he mm-hmm. still goes out on tour with. And actually, Darren Warden, he's got his band there. They have a new CD coming out in October. So they're all very, very busy.
I know when I had talked to Scott when he was on You Talking to Me, and I had asked him about the book that he was writing. Is there an update on the book?
Well, it has been finalized. It is going to go on sale in November. So the book he actually wrote with Harry Doherty. And Harry Doherty used to write for Melody Maker way back in the day. And mm-hmm. he, back in the 70s and maybe early 80s, he went out on the road with Thin Lizzy an awful lot. And he had actually written a book in the early 80s. But because Philip died, a lot of the stuff was just kind of a little too close to the bone around the time when Phil died. So sure. It kind of all got put on the back burner. And, you know, all these years later, Harry and Scott decided to revisit it. Mm-hmm. So it's finally been completed. It actually was like 3 years in the making.
Wow.
And, it's a terrible story, to tell you the truth, because they really wanted to do the book the right way. They wanted to do, you know, a lot of words, but they also wanted to do a lot of pictures, mm-hmm. right? A lot of, you know, old photographs and maybe a lot of things, because I helped them quite a bit with it, a lot of things that had never kind of seen the light of day before. So they found this publisher who was really into this, you know, nice coffee table size book that wanted to do, you know, all of the words, but all the photos as well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he got sick. This publisher got sick, and he went into the hospital and said, you know, we'll sort it all out when I come out of hospital. But it turned out he had cancer, and he passed away.
Oh, wow.
So they had to go back to square one, trying to find sort of the right publisher. So they do have the right publisher again. And I know Harry actually has posted some stuff on his Facebook about it coming out. But it is actually available for pre-order on Amazon. November 16th is when it's supposed to come out.
Well, I got to get a copy of that. If it's possible at some time, maybe you'll get Scott back on the show. We can talk about the book.
You know I will.
That would be
you
cool.
You know I will.
Any other recent story you might want to share with listeners?
I did pop over to Europe myself to see them play with Guns N' Roses.
Right on.
I went to the Birmingham show and the Manchester show. That was a lot of fun. I mean, Guns N' Roses, you know, they put on that big old rock show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was really great to see. It was really nice for Thin Lizzy to kind of get up in front of some really enormous audiences. And Axl Rose himself actually wanted Thin Lizzy to come out on the road. He's a huge Lizzy fan himself. He spent a lot of time like chit-chatting with Scott and Brian and telling the two of them stories about how, you know, when he was younger, how Thin Lizzy got him through so many bad times when he was living on the street and, you know, all the different songs that kind of helped him get him through bad times. So
sure.
That was pretty neat.
Well, very cool. It was great to have you on again. Appreciate you sharing the updated information, and also say hi to Scott for me. Scott, on you talking to me not that long ago. It was great to talk to him as well.
Yeah, I absolutely will say hello from you.
All right, Ronnie. Thanks for taking the time to be on the show again.
No, thank you, JD. I really appreciate it.
Next up on the 100th You Talking to Me CJAM special, my 100th show here at CJAM, co-hosted today by Lippo.
Thank you for having me again, Big JD.
Big JD and Lippo in the morning, Thursdays at 8.
Yes.
That's been a fun show.
It's a great show. I love it.
It's cool because it's just like a anything goes thing. I mean, we pick a topic for the week.
Yes.
But it's, you know.
The topic is just something to fall back on.
Yeah, pretty much. The topic is the filler.
Exactly.
So, former high school football star and current radio game announcer and sports blog writer Ryan Sweetlew Lulick joins us now to update us on the world of fantasy sports. Is that something that... Are you into fantasy sports? I remember the Chrysler, somebody used to come around all the time and hand out the papers with, you know, to get involved with a...
No, I'm into
picks.
Sports. Yeah, your picks. I really wasn't into the fantasy sports thing. I like betting on sports events, mm-hmm. but I was never into the fantasy thing.
I bet you can't wait for that to happen at the casino.
The fantasy thing?
I don't know. Betting on sports. Are they going to have that at the casino as well?
Sports book at the casino.
Sports book.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the deal is there.
It's not going on yet, is it?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Probably not, no.
I'm not big on sports.
I know you're not.
Except golf. I love golf. Okay, so let's talk to Ryan Sweetlew Lulick about fantasy sports. So, Sweetlew, welcome back to You Talking to Me.
JD?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, not too bad. What about yourself?
I'm doing good. Thanks. I appreciate you coming on the show again and being on for the 100th You Talking to Me show here at CJAM.
It's back in the world of fantasy football, man. Come on, giddy up.
That's what I want to talk to you about. Get any updates from you and see what's happening in the world of fantasy sports. What's the biggest thing that you could maybe say that's going on right now?
Well, you know, one thing that it sounded to me that they're trying to change, I guess, in fantasy football is that some sites now is that you can do it where, you know, you're betting on 1 week. You know, there are certain sites you can go to where you're picking one player a week, one team a week, and you can just do random bets like that. You know, any way they can try to get money off of you is big time. But people like me who are in regular fantasy, well, they notice a big change in fantasy football now, and that it is no longer a running back league. It is totally quarterback receivers. You know, the tide has changed. Receivers are, I mean, there's so many of them out there, and it's, they're big, big, big point grabbers. And the Detroit Lions have two big fantasy guys now.
So what are the best websites for statistics and stuff like that?
Every site nowadays that talks anything about football, you know, is going to somehow either have their bet about fantasy football on their own site or link it to somewhere else. I'm going to give you a couple sites that I really enjoy that I know that are popular that, you know, isn't a scam or nothing away that, you know, is good fun. Yahoo Sports, real league. You either can do a point system or category. CBS Sportsline, still my opinion, the best because it gives you great updated stats. ESPN, another good site. NFL.com, and a new one that used to be called Fanball, it's now called RealSports.com, also another good site. With that said, ESPN and NFL, you can do free on there. And you can get all your buddies on there. You can do it free now, and you know, and that's a real good way. Because sometimes sites are almost $130 to $175 just to get that site.
Wow.
Yeah. So when teams now are letting it be free, like I said, ESPN and NFL, it's pretty cool. Now we'll have certain, you know, lines, like none of your records during that season will be saved, which is not really that big a deal. You know, it might be certain point systems that you can't do. But again, the word free is out there. So if you're trying to get, you know, just 10 random guys real fast to start a league up, that is definitely the way to go. Plus, if you're by yourself and you want to join a league, NFL, ESPN, Yahoo, they all have sites where you can go on and join people all over the world, you know, and talk some trash that way as well.
What about the when you just get together with a group of guys and, you know, you're local and stuff like that? Will you still set up some kind of website or will it still be web-based? Is that the easiest way still to go about it? Because, I mean, a lot of times, you know, at work and stuff like that, people would be bringing around papers and you do your picks and hand them all in and stuff. Is it all kind of done web-based now?
Mostly, you know, I have actually a draft I'm going to today that we do off of CBS Sportsline. And one thing I love about my two leagues I have is that, you know, we all still love getting together that day, going there, putting the names up on the board still. You know, of course, not everybody brings a laptop, and everybody can just kind of sink it right in there at the same time.
Right.
But the best thing about fantasy football is that live draft. Being with your buddies, you know, making fun of the dumb picks, and, you know, being in that room. You know, today I'm in a two-quarterback league, you know, which is a little different than a one quarterback league. And it's, again, JD, being at a draft, it's the best thing, man. That's where, you know, you add, you know, how it goes. You'll have your out of towners. I have another league that we do, people who moved out of town, have a friend in Arizona. So he'll be in Arizona, same time, you know, because you have a live draft. You say you have your draft set for August 25th at 6 o'clock, where everybody has to be online, logged in at that time, and, you know, the draft will start.
And it must be, obviously, a lot of work goes into the fantasy sports games or betting and those kind of things. Fill us in a little bit again about the structure of, you know, kind of who handles what as far as, you know, putting the whole thing together and keeping it organized.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually now have retired from handling JD because it is you hit the nail on the head with something. It is a hassle, man. And it's basically a job because first thing is if you don't get, you know, you're always going to try to get your friends. You know, people you know, acquaintances, cousins, brothers, whatever. The hardest part is chase them down and trying to get that money. And, I mean, that is, all of a sudden, that person you talk to every week is a missing link. I mean, that is the biggest thing about fantasy sports is collecting the people's money. I mean, because they'll all be there that day to, you know, pick their teams. It's the money. Now you also set the league with the point system you want. You set up the draft. You set up, there's a lot. You do ad drops. You do commissioner trades. There's a lot involved with a person who wants to set up a league. And there's a lot of work in it. And again, the main thing is tracking down that money, holding on to that money. And one of our leagues we do, we have a bank account where all that money just goes there. We have a football, baseball, and basketball league where all that money just constantly just goes around and you know, pays them all off all the time. Works actually pretty good. Now, I want to give a little advice to a couple people.
All right.
So that's all. You know, first thing is, you know, say if you're a rookie and you're going into a fantasy football site, make sure the first thing you do is look at that scoring system. If it's a two-quarterback league, quarterbacks are really important. Plus, quarterbacks give you a lot of points. Don't draft those receivers and running backs right away first and go in there with, you know, Tim Tebow and Kevin Cobb as your quarterback. You got to make sure you get your quarterback. So the most important thing is always look at your league scoring system. If running backs are getting the most points, well, you're going to want to grab some money. Whatever's getting the most points, you want to grab. That's the biggest thing about it. Know your scoring system. Another thing is, don't ask your friend next to you for any advice. He's not going to help you. If you ask him what court running back to take, trust me, he's going to tell you to take the wrong one because he might want to take that one. This is all money. And remember, it might be your best friend, but he wants to win just as much as you do. Now, let me give, I got a couple of you fancy guys out there. I know everyone loves to know who's the big sleepers this year, who's on the rise. I'm going to give you guys a couple of little names that I like this year. Guys on the rise, quarterback, Chicago Bears quarterback, Jay Cutler. He got his guy, Brandon Marshall, back this year. I also like to bring in Michael Bush in the backfield to help out Cutler a lot. Also, quarterback Josh Freeman, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Brought in Vincent Jackson. I like the rookie signing of Doug Martin as well. I think Freeman's going to be on that move. Again, I mentioned Doug Martin, rookie. I like Doug Martin a lot. If you have a chance to get this guy as your number two running back, grab him. Wide receiver Brandon Lloyd. Now with New England, Tom Brady throwing him the ball all day. You can't go wrong with that. And wide receiver Dearest Thomas. Denver Broncos, Peyton Manning's going to find his Marvin Harrison. I believe Thomas is going to be that guy. And some guys to stay away from, quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. You don't know what's going on with Mike Wallace. Hines Ward is gone. No Robert Mendenhall. That's a lot of missing pieces from that Pittsburgh Steelers offense. Quarterback Mark Sanchez. I'm not impressed with Mark Sanchez in his first 3 years. I don't expect his fourth year to do anything different. Running back Ryan Matthews already broke his collarbone. That's to be a huge question mark. They say he'll be ready for the start of the season, but I'm not putting my money on that. Also, running back LeGarrette Blount. I mentioned that Tampa Bay signed rookie running back Doug Martin. LeBlount's going to lose a lot of carries, and I would let someone else take that handcuff problem. And wide receiver Andre Johnson. That's right, Andre Johnson. I know he's the elite top receiver. He hurt his quad and his hammy last year, and already both had popped up already early in the season. I would expect him to take that injury problem. You go ahead and get a Brandon Marshall or Rodney White. I hope that advice helps you guys on your draft day, because, hey, you're getting advice from a champion.
That's right. He is a champion. Played some major high school football, and also you may have heard him on the radio, a couple of Detroit stations there. And also, I just want to get a quick update. You've been writing for one of the sports blogs.
I've been writing for footballnation.com, and now I just got another little gig with amazingblue.com that is writing a bunch of our football Michigan Wolverines, updates every week. So another little writing gig, the Football Nation. You guys can check me out on there. Just go to the search box, type in my name, Ryan Lulick, and all my articles will pop up for you.
All right, Ryan Sweet Lou Lulick, thanks for being on the 100th You Talking to Me show here at CJM.
Hey, not a problem, Big JD. You keep on rocking, baby.
Thanks, man.
Hey, this is Joey Vera from Armored Saint and Fate's Warning, and you're listening to 99.1 CJM.
If you have an interesting career or an interesting life experience that you'd like to share with others, you can contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking to Me website. YouTalkingToMe.ca. That's the letter U, talking the number two, me. YouTalkingToMe.ca. And hey, everyone, don't forget to check out the podcast from the You Talking to Me website, because it is going to contain extra content that we were not able to have in the live show due to obvious time restraints here on air. So visit www.youtalkingtome.ca. That's the letter U, talking the number two, me, youtalkingtome.ca. We got some flickering lights and beautiful weather. Mm-hmm. They don't go together.
No, they don't. Usually lightning and flickering lights go together.
Mm-hmm. Reno Perlin, you've met on a couple occasions, probably.
I've met Reno, yes, I have. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Reno's a local certified strength trainer and nutrition expert, and he's president of Life and Body Fitness Challenge Incorporated. Reno's also a brace specialist, registered massage therapist, and nearly finished school now to become a registered nurse.
Really?
Yeah, just finishing up, I think, at the university.
So what's he planning doing with that? Is he going to work in a hospital or just wants to become a registered nurse?
I don't think that Reno's going to be working in a hospital. He has some pretty big plans for his company, Life and Body.
Okay.
And so that's going to all tie in with, you know, some type of expansion and stuff that he wants to do. And
registered nurse, yeah, that's like a couple-year program at least, isn't it?
Oh, I think I want to say 4 years.
4 years, yeah. Wow, okay.
He started out at St. Clair College, and now he's doing, I think, intern residence type stuff at the university now. And yeah, it's a pretty big deal. And he's just, you know, he's a great guy for one thing, but he's so into what he does and so knowledgeable, and you know, his education in the field is like, you know, it covers the gamut.
Sure does.
And he's usually on You Talking to Me at the start of the year to promote health and fitness and New Year's resolutions, because that's a big deal, you know, the beginning of the year. And in fact, I think I may have had him on once at the start of the year, but I'm trying to get him on now all the time at, you know, before the first of the year to, you know,
get people ready.
Some education, get people ready for their New Year's resolutions, which are usually, and I mean, he talks on smoking as well because of how it fits into your health and nutrition. But I mean, especially, you know,
you got to smoke to be healthy.
Yes, you do.
What are you smoking?
Well, we're going to get into that a little later on the show. So, Reno Perlin. Hey, Reno, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you, Big JD. It's always a pleasure being on your show once a year and doing a fitness segment.
Cool. You're usually here for the New Year's resolution time of the year to talk about health and nutrition, which is always great. A lot of things always going on with you. You're always keeping busy in your field. Tell me what's going on with nursing. You're getting closer to completion there, I guess, and I want to know what you're finding most interesting. What area?
Yeah, so I'm just wrapping up. I am now in my third and a half year for nursing, and I'm almost done this journey. At the moment, I'm going to be entering a placement where it involves a specialty with the heart. It's called telemetry, and it's going to be another specialty that I'm looking into to helping cardiac patients and as well as other patients who have trouble breathing. And so all together, this is going to put a nice, wonderful spin on life and body. And the more experience I get in the different aspects of nursing, that's just going to help my client care with my company.
Are a lot of people still following through from New Year's resolution? I know now we're like halfway through the year. So do they keep following through? Do they make it to like a maintenance area?
Well, fantastic question, Big JD. And I'm probably a great person to ask myself, because all my clients can relate to me and I can relate to them. So what it is that when I meet clients at the beginning of the year, we jump on a life and body program where we want to meet all of their goals. And for all the clients that are in the middle of the program or completing the program, we definitely want to maintain that. So I think it's very important to know that, you know, it's very natural that anyone, including myself, can gain weight at any time during the year. Mm-hmm. So you take for myself, for example, Big JD, even myself as the owner of the company, and this is why my clients relate to me, is that I was under some emotional stress and as well as some school stress, and unfortunately, I gained weight. And the most weight that I've gained as of April 15th, which was 3.5 months ago, I tipped the scales at 240 pounds.
Would be considered, you know, overweight to you because you are a big guy anyway. You're tall and you're, you know, you're large. But how much overweight? And then I think you're leading up to a recent goal that you achieved for yourself.
You're correct. Normally, I hover anywhere between 200 and 10 pounds to be realistic. And that is even covering some, you know, that's allowing me to feel comfortable and having a little bit of body fat on my body. If I'm in excellent shape, I'll be between 200 and 205. But when me, myself, I'm 238 pounds, 240 pounds, those are some definite warning signs.
Sure.
And just to give some reflection, my weight today, so three and a half months later, I lost 46 pounds, and my lowest weight to date is 191. And today I weighed myself, I'm 193 pounds.
Wow, that's amazing. Congratulations on that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible.
So once again, it goes back to your question of the maintenance phase, right? I think it's important that anyone can gain weight when there's significant stress that's introduced to the lifestyle. But at the end of, or I should say throughout this journey, I think it's important to recognize that and do something about it.
I think that's such an important aspect, is that you don't only talk the talk, but you walk the walk. So,
well, I think I have to represent fitness in every way that I try to promote it. And once again, I think it's also important to let clients know that I'm not invincible, you know, and that is just because I'm the owner of the company, I too can gain weight if I let life grab me by the horns. But at the same time, I have to be able to recognize that and show my clients that, hey, I'm under stress right now. I'm in the process of managing that stress. And in the end, I'm going to manage my weight.
I would imagine a great deal of that, if not all of it, is cardio-related, cardiovascular exercise, but also food as well. I'm just kind of wondering if supplements play a part in that at all.
You know, I got asked this question today, and I seem to be answering this even for people that tend to bump into me from time to time, and they always say to me, Reno, how did you lose that weight so fast? Mm-hmm. And I'm getting messages via Facebook, email, with tons of compliments saying, Reno, I need to lose that amount of weight. How did you do it?
Right.
And I think it's very important to recognize that during my 2 years of gaining this weight, I was somewhat active, but I was mostly sedentary. And when I mean sedentary, I mean that a lot of my lifestyle was dedicated to studying and studying at a desk in my office.
Right.
And so I went from a somewhat sedentary lifestyle to, we'll even describe it as a Rocky Balboa regimen, where it's just boom, you turn it on, and then you go from being almost very inactive to very active. Mm-hmm. And although I would describe it as a gradual process, I increased the intensity and the amount of work week by week. And as a result of all that work, that's how I lost the weight. And all that encompassed a great amount, or I should say a balanced regimen of weight training, cardiovascular exercise, and a complete nutrition overhaul.
Yeah, I think it's kind of important to note that you can do these things naturally, and there's not necessarily a quick fix. You need to put in the time, the effort. Right.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And you asked a question about supplements as well, and I do take protein powders. I think it's very important, especially when you're in a circumstance or a situation that you are not able to eat a chicken breast and a serving of broccoli in front of a client, and therefore you have to supplement it. And therefore you may have a 3-minute window, and that's enough time to take your protein shake that you need before you enter, you know, your next couple hours of work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So supplements do play a role in your success program. And I think that's very important to be discussed in a client's routine. Yes, you are correct to say that, you know, it's a definite change of lifestyle in order to achieve these type of results.
Life and Body Fitness Challenge Incorporated is your company, and you should probably give your phone number so that you could be contacted if listeners would like to do so.
Yes, best way to contact me is through my email or phone. My phone number is 519-250-LIFE or 519-250-5433, and my email is lifeandbody@coachco.ca. Once again, that is life and body, not the ampersand, info@kojiko.ca.
Reno, you helped so many people. Of course, I can attest to that firsthand. I thank you for that, and probably on behalf of everybody that you've done that for. You know, I'm sure you hear that a lot anyway, and it's always great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Big JD. I always appreciate doing an interview with your company, and I look forward to future interviews. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Reno.
And so as mentioned just before Reno, we talked about what our... You asked, what are they smoking?
What are you smoking?
What are you smoking?
To get healthy.
What am I smoking? Speaking of smoking, there still seems to be some controversy around medical marijuana and the caregivers that provide it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Michigan, it's been a pretty big
industry
and also, you know, news thing, you know what I mean?
But more and as time goes on, more and more people are getting their license to grow, and more people are getting their license to consume. And
yeah,
it just keeps going on. It's going to get bigger and bigger, and eventually something else is going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And my next guest, Linda Gray, was on You Talking to Me last year to talk about this subject. And she's a caregiver and also owner of the Michigan-based Plant Doctors and Design. So
I remember listening to that show. It was a good show.
And she... if I'm not mistaken, on that show, I had Brian Johns
yep.
on there as well.
Yep.
So, yeah. And who is also a caregiver up in the Flint, Michigan area.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. Linda Gray, back on You Talking to Me. Hey, Linda, it's great to have you back on the show.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
The 100th show here at CJM. And, of course, you were a guest for a live show with Brian Johns, of course. It was a medical marijuana show, and want to get some updates from you on, you know, any changes and things that are going on now with laws and bylaws and things like that. Are there any particular changes right now that are going on or have transpired since we last talked?
One of the best changes that's happened since the everything has been coming around, almost like with the gun certifications being done, more people are becoming their own caregivers, finding caregivers. When you are suffering a disease that needs to have the medical marijuana, the best part of that is having private, your own medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they've done it with all the laws is they've made it easier, and the people are, those prices have come down. If you're renewing, the doctors will give you a discounted price. But with the price of the supplies to take care of the plants, they're starting to skyrocket.
Oh, yeah.
So I think the fertilizer companies, and, you know, it's the same thing as once you have a proven product, you are... You know, it's hard to keep it in the shelf.
More and more as this thing grows, no pun intended, you know, everybody's trying to cash in more and more as it's still pretty easy to get a card. I want to ask you about that for use and also, you know, as a caregiver to actually sell medical marijuana.
The with the caregiver, it depends on the caregiver and the patient, how they have it set up. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they don't even sell, they just have the plant for the patient's use.
Okay.
So if there's 12 that are available per patient, 3 will be the patients. So, and usually that's more than enough because the high grade is how you take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then but the big thing about getting a caregiver that's not going to rip you off, we've had a lot of people that have gone through, even the military men, have gone through different facilities for the licensing, and they were assigned a caregiver that they never met, they never knew, they don't know anything about, but that person got the 12 plants put under their name, but to try to get a hold of them. So that's why I've been a plant doctor for 25 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's always been one of those things that you... either you're a farmer and you do it for the land and the patients, and that's what the caregiving is truly about.
Sure.
But the you know, having that access to a farmer that you can walk up and have the vegetable stands. Vegetable stands are a thing of the past, and it's sad because that was the pure fresh produce that you would get instead of going to your supermarket and stuff that's coming in from China or Chile.
Well, it wasn't really that long ago that, you know, all this came about, the medical marijuana being okayed and whatnot. How well has it been working for pain, especially any particular types of pain has it been most useful for?
I know my patients, the first thing that when you're stricken with cancer and you're going through the chemo is you lose weight because you don't feel like eating. Mm-hmm. And when they are getting their port put in, the doctor specifically told my patient to make sure he got his card. That's why we voted it in. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to be on the street corner getting that medication. Keep that weight up, because right, that's a huge, you know, when you see somebody going down from cancer, they're bent over, they're muscle diminished, and just keeping that appetite, so the edibles, the brownies, and the chocolate chip cookies, all different ways that you can deliver the healing properties of the medical marijuana.
Do caregivers always grow their own medical marijuana, or can you get...
Well, caregivers, that you don't have to be a patient to be a caregiver.
Right.
A caregiver is the grower, where the patient has that connection, and the patient doesn't have 12 plants on their card unless they're their caregiver and patient.
Right. What I'm getting at is a caregiver always grows, though, or does a care? Can a caregiver ever supply from another supplier? You know what I mean?
Like, oh, a caregiver can always get together with other farmers and bring their produce to market.
Okay.
And that's where having the connection with people that are doing different strains and different, you know, but a lot of them, there was, because of the situation of 12 plants per caregiver, and you can have up to 5 patients, some people are, you know, pushing that limit. No, they want more than 5 patients.
Mm-hmm.
If you have one patient, it's a perfect situation. If you have one patient, one caregiver, but I would never, just like a doctor shouldn't do his own doctoring.
Right.
A patient shouldn't have to put the time and the effort and what it takes to go into the product, because they're the patient. All they need is the healing effect of it.
Thank you for the updated information, and it was great to have you back on the show.
And if anybody's looking for a plant doctor, that's one of the things that I can, over the phone, if you have a call-in, people have different situations. You can do a lot of diagnosis, but overwatering and not enough light are the two things that will change your whole caregiver experience.
We need to mention, too, that, I mean, you're a caregiver for all plants, any types of plants. Not
absolutely.
Yeah.
When okay. people go on vacation and they have millions of dollars in their house with the gardens that we install in the first place and we take care of on a weekly basis,
mm-hmm.
you can leave, and you can leave your pets, your house, your, you know, a lot of times the housekeepers, everybody are still in doing their job at that house, but the caregiver will go in and just take care of everything that needs taken care of as far as the horticulture. Or fish tanks, a lot of fish tanks and pets.
All right. Great stuff. And do you have a website for that, Linda?
Well, you can email me.
Okay.
At bestshotproductions@yahoo.com.
bestshotproductions@yahoo.com. All right. Thanks for the update, Linda.
It was a pleasure talking to you, and I hope to see you soon.
All right. Thanks.
We now go to the Windsor, Detroit area, where an alien craft has just landed.
I want you men to surround the craft. Chris, you stay with me.
What are we going to do, Jeff?
We're going in.
What? They're extraterrestrials.
What are you doing here? Why have you come here?
We have come here to listen to 99.1 FM CJAM.
99.1 FM CJAM, redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit.
And something else that's been kind of a hotter topic in recent time is the Michigan film industry, you know, and the tax incentives and all that transpired there with, you know, them capping the incentive and so forth.
Right. And, Hollywood of the North.
Hollywood of the North, yeah. And it's kind of went as quick as it came, unfortunately. I mean, there's, you know, still some things going on here and films coming to Michigan and more than a lot of people know, I think. But still not, you know, what I think it could have been. And sure. Hopefully that changes a little bit because the cap has been raised a little since. So we have actor-producer Billy Whitehouse on today. And he's a major part of Michigan's film industry and its events.
He's the founder of the Michigan Entertainment Network.
And I've certainly found Billy to be the go-to guy within the local film industry. He's very connected, big on networking, and he's really up on everything related, you know, that happens locally in the industry. And I've talked to him in the past about the here today, gone tomorrow tax incentives, and shouldn't really say here today, gone tomorrow, but there's definitely was a change for the worse, I guess, and. And they seem to be slowly on the rise again, like I say, and hopefully that continues to be the case. And Billy joins us today on the 100th CJAM You Talking to Me special. Hey, Billy, it's great to have you back on You Talking to Me.
Thank you, JD. Appreciate the opportunity.
And maybe you can tell us what's happening, what's the newest developments with the Michigan film industry.
Well, after the change in the film incentive, they made some adjustments. They raised the minimum spend up to $100,000 for a project, and they adjusted the percentages a little bit. So they brought down the percentages, but they're still very lucrative. You can have up to 35% of Michigan personnel expenditures, and it's still a great incentive that's competitive with the very competitive Louisiana and New Mexico.
Well, that's pretty good because at last, I mean, when this first happened, when they wanted to cap this, didn't they want to cap that at 25%?
They brought that down. They actually put a $25 million cap on it, but the governor is seeing the value of this, and he has raised the cap up to $50 million for next year.
Oh, okay. What's next as far as any policies go is you just mentioned the raising to the 50%. Is there anything else happening?
Yeah, well, there's still a strong organization out there called Michigan Film First, who's been advocating for a $100 million cap. Even with the $50 million cap, that still gives us the range of over $300 million in film production opportunity here. So that's going to be a good start. If we can get that up to $100 million, that'll really put us back into the game.
Very cool. Are there some big movies coming back to Michigan, or what's been happening there as far as feature films and stuff?
There are. Michigan Motion Picture Studios, which used to be Raleigh Studios, and they've rebranded themselves, has a film shooting there right now. It's an untitled Tornado project. It's a large budget production coming in from Warner Brothers and New Line Productions. And they've been shooting on set over in Pontiac and on location in Rochester and Detroit and Lake Orion and various other locations. And so it's been a great opportunity, again, to get the Michigan people back to work and get some opportunities and to let the rest of the nation know that there is production going on here.
And then the Michigan Entertainment Network. Clue us in again what the Michigan Entertainment Network is and does and what's happening with that.
Yeah, well, Michigan Entertainment is a company that I made up in order to connect people, to find out who has what, who wants what, and put them together for empowering the Michigan creative class. And so I use MichiganEntertainmentNetwork.com, the blog there, to just share various articles and opportunities and events that are going on. There's a lot of production still going on here. There's S3 Entertainment Group is creating a movie called Game Time that's going into pre-production. There is the television show, the hit television show Hardcore Pawn, that is still shooting here. We have a new medical show called Ask Dr. Nandy that's been shooting, as well as some local productions that have been going on. We just had producer Paul Mason in town the other day. He had come in to do a speak and to meet with some of the Michigan people. He's from Welcome Back Potter fame and Chips and Amityville Horror Movie as the producer and writer. He was in town meeting with some local writers and producers in order to create some new projects here. Karen Kevorkian is one of the project that she's taken on as producing, and she's a local screenwriter and old sweat hog from the Welcome Back Potter days. Mm-hmm. And she's created a project called Trophy Wife. They're in development right now, and they're moving forward with that. So the beauty of the film incentive is that there's additional local productions as far as screenwriters and producers that are stepping up to create new opportunities. We have another Michigan star, Joel Reisig, who's made a half a dozen movies in Michigan already. He's a Michigan native, and he's having a class come up called Be Your Own Hollywood. And that is a great opportunity for people who are interested in finding out about, you know, taking their screenplay and making a movie, or if they're an actor and they're looking at, you know, putting themselves into something. He really has the nuts and bolts as far as how to take that. And in this two-day course, he shows you how you can produce your own movie.
Great stuff. There's obviously a lot of creative minds in Detroit and Michigan. It's always great to hear this wonderful news as far as the Michigan film industry. And then obviously you're pretty busy with the Michigan Entertainment Network, but what's happening with you these days?
I've been doing some acting. I have a commercial on TV that I shot, and been doing some local films, and also been helping out with the promotion of a production called Water Walk. Water Walk was a local Michigan production. It was a film based on Steve Faulkner's prize-winning book called Water Walk. It was a father-son journey about a 1,000-mile travel to find each other. It was based on the whole discovery route of the Mississippi that Marquette Joliet did. And this Michigan main movie has come to Birmingham. They had their premiere on August 25th. And on August 30th, Thursday, tomorrow, they're going to have a screening of the film and then a networking event at Dick O'Dowd's in Birmingham. So it'll be a great opportunity to come out at 7 o'clock to check out the movie and then also to network with the creative class and find out what projects are going on and what projects are coming up and be in the loop. So I hope you guys can come out and look forward to seeing you.
Great stuff. It was great to include you on my 100th show here at CJAM.
That's very awesome. Congratulations, JD.
Thanks, Billy. And next on the show, another former guest, as this special is comprised of past guests on You Talking to Me. Since 2007, I think probably a guest or two on the show from 2007, 2008. Natalie Litt has been rearing bugs for over a decade. Founded in 2000, Best Bug and Feeders Incorporated is the largest Canadian breeder of top quality feeders. Mm-hmm. And they care for crickets, mealworms, superworms, rats and mice, and supply area zoos and stores. Natalie's back to update us on bugs and breeding bugs. All right, Natalie, welcome back to the show. You talking to me?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. Wanted to talk to you a little bit today, get a little update on Best Bug Feeders and what you guys do there, and you know who you supply and that type of thing. If there's anything new going on, how about you know, regarding the company itself? Are there any changes in the bug industry?
I think it's kind of at its plateau. You know, about 5 years ago it was at its peak, and now it's kind of plateaued out. It's usually it was probably 5 years. And prior, every year it was increasing by about 20% because of the popularity of reptiles. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of plateaued itself out this year and last year. So
I guess that's kind of the update, the plateau, or the what is it with the reptiles, that they're not quite as popular as they were, or what's up with that?
Yeah, you know, like 5 years ago or a few years prior to that, they used a lot of reptiles for advertising, you know, like geckos for telephone, and just, it was, you know, snakes, and it was just like a fad, I guess you could say, for a while. And
right.
Now the fad's, you know, it's kind of worn out a little bit, and everyone that has a reptile still has to feed their reptiles and, you know, yada, yada. So that's kind of the update there. It's still a popular industry, and you know the sales are still great as far as bugs goes, but it hasn't increased by 20% like it has in previous years.
Right, sure. All the critters and the zoo animals and everything. I mean, they still have to eat, right? So,
and same with, you know, like rehabilitation projects. Governments, they've done cutbacks, so there's not as many rehabilitation projects, or they've actually taken some out. There's not as many anymore, so that's affected it as well.
And tell me a little bit about rehab projects, and what are these that you refer to?
Rehab, there's like a loggerhead shrike. It's a type of bird, and they've been rehabilitating them for quite a while, and you know, there's always you know, scares of government cutbacks, or they're not allowed to increase the number of birds, or, you know, that they're rehabilitating. And then what other rehabilitation? And there's, you know, you have your places that are, you know, nonprofit that try to rehabilitate injured reptiles. They're strictly for the reptiles. They do birds and snakes, you know, all of the native reptiles and birds. So then you supply them as well. And, you know, their funding's been cut. Like they get money from the government as well to rehabilitate these animals, and their funding's been cut. So it's kind of, you know, it's a circle, it's a cycle, and we're affected by it as well. So
I want to ask you a little bit about like mosquitoes or things that carry potential diseases, because I know there's a big situation going on again with the West Nile virus and the mosquitoes. Is that something you guys have to worry about? Like, do you breed mosquitoes? Do you get mosquitoes in from wherever you might?
No, things like they don't really, we've never had a scare with the West Nile, but there have been diseases that have, you know, wiped out 80% of the cricket breeders in North America.
Wow.
And that was a scare that was about 3 years ago, and people haven't bounced back. And it's just, you know, there's cricket breeders that are, they breed maybe 200,000 a week, or we were doing 500,000 a week. And it's just, it's devastated a lot of them, and they haven't been able to get back on their feet, because with this virus, once you, it's a parvovirus, and once you've had it in your facility, it'll take years, a couple of years at least, to get rid of that virus, because it's the smallest known virus to man. So we had our facility ozoned, the University of Guelph. They came and they did a project at our facility, and they ozoned it, and we had to repaint everything with oil-based paints, and it took us almost a year and a half to start up again.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was quite devastating, because, I mean, it's your income, right?
Sure, yeah. And what does the ozoning do exactly to your area there?
It just, it's kind of like it kills the virus, and it's like a machine that goes in the middle of the facility, and it puts ozone into the air, like high concentrations. You can't go into the facility for like 24 hours, 48 hours after.
You must have had a lot of stock to move for the processor.
Oh yeah. We have, you know, tons of wire shelving and bins, and you have to take everything out of the building. And then once you ozone the building, then you put the stuff in the building, then you ozone the building with the equipment in it again. And it was quite a lengthy process. You know, it went over a few month period. And
you kind of got me wondering how ozoning affects the ozone. Do you have any idea on that there?
You'd have to ask an ozone specialist.
I'll get a hold of NASA for that one.
I think the University of Guelph would be a little bit more accessible, because they actually have a specialist in there.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, that strictly works with ozone and ozone machines.
Right, so, and we certainly hope it was a specialist that came out. So
yes, I could have been fooled.
Are zoos as popular as they were?
Yeah, like they're quite consistent. And then, you know, in the summertime, they take on a couple of rehabilitation projects, so it'll increase in the summertime. And then, you know, in the wintertime, the rehabilitation projects, they leave the zoo and then they go to their designated facilities, and then you supply those facilities directly. So then that, you know, decreases the zoo's order.
Mm-hmm.
Or the size of crickets change, you know, because they bring in babies or smaller ones, and then they need the smaller crickets. And then,
all right,
you know, and then you're kind of, the cricket sizes increase, you know, month after month, because the reptiles are growing. The price of like rodents has increased quite a bit in the States. So, you know, we've had to gradually increase our price. And because a lot of times, like, the demand for rodents is so high over here, it's mm-hmm. insane, like to feed the snakes and the, you know, the hawks or whatever.
Right.
That a lot of times you have to go to the States to supply the demand, because there's not really that great of a supply here. And we can only do so much, right? We had a facility that had about 2,000 rats in it at one time, like all different sizes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but that wasn't enough to supply the demand. So we'd have to go to the states. So, you know, the states kind of determines the price that we sell over here. You know, we still kind of have to go on what they do in the United States as well.
Your kids are musicians. Yep. What's happening with them? They what's going on? Any news there?
Last year they opened up for Honeymoon Suite in Sauble Beach. So they play, like, because we're from a small area, and my husband Rob, he's been playing for 20 years, so he's known up in the Owen Sound area. Mm-hmm. So it was easy for him because he has a good reputation. So it was easy for him to get gigs for the boys, because my 10-year-old, he plays bass, 12-year-old plays drums, and then Rob sings with them and he plays guitar, right? So they got quite a few gigs, like, because you have the Sauble Beach Festival and that goes all summer long. And then they do, like, they played for the Meaford Army Base for the Family Center. Mm-hmm. And they played, like, at a few birthday parties, and they play at campgrounds in the summertime. So
that's great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
For such young guys. Good stuff. And it's always good to talk.
Now that we're in Windsor, I got them into Long and McQuaid's and stuff, and I want them to meet people so they can
networking
progress.
Yeah. That's what it's all about. And when they record some original material, we'll get it down here to CJAM and air it for the masses.
I would love that. I would be grateful.
Yeah, you got to get them doing some original material for sure.
Yeah, original. Like right now, they do covers, you know, because mm-hmm. it's easy for them. They do write their own stuff, but it's just music. There's no lyrics involved or anything yet, you know.
Yeah. Cool.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, we're a big music station here.
Yeah.
All right, Natalie. Well, it was great to have you on the show, and thanks for giving us the update on Best Bug Feeders, and it's always a pleasure to have you on.
Hey, and congratulations, for your 100th show. That's great. That's quite an achievement, so it's awesome. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Woodman from
Plants and Animals,
and you're listening to CJAM 99.1, Windsor, Detroit.
Do you have an interesting career? You have an interesting life experience to share with others? If you'd like to be a guest on You Talking To Me, contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking To Me website. That's youtalkingtome.ca. The letter U, talking, the number 2, me, youtalkingtome.ca.
And hey, another reminder to check out the You Talking To Me website for the podcast of today's show, which will contain extra content, bonus content of today's 100th You Talking To Me at CJAM special. That's www.youtalkingtome.ca. That's the letter U, talking, the number 2, me, youtalkingtome.ca. It's always fun to have a comedian on the show.
I love comics.
And Heather Nichols was the first comedian I had on the show. And that's, we have interviews on the morning show too, which is kind of cool. And that's, so you get to talk to some of these interesting people. And, you know, some of the people that we've had on the morning show have come back onto You Talking To Me to do a longer interview.
Sure.
It gives me great pleasure to have Heather Nichols back on the show, a stand-up comic from the Michigan, from the Detroit area. And mm-hmm. she's here to update us on the Laugh Riot Dolls. And that's her comedy troupe. And Heather's also an actress, a podcaster, and radio traffic announcer for one of the Detroit stations.
Ashley Asphalt.
What? What is that? Like a radio name or something? Is there somebody called that or anything?
There's somebody. Asphalt, I know. Asphalt, sorry. It's not Asphalt.
Heather Nichols, welcome back to You Talking To Me.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back on now for the 100th show here at CJAM. I want you to update us on what's been happening with your career as a stand-up comic.
Things are going awesome with the Laugh Riot Dolls. We had our one-year anniversary. We're coming up on 2 years already. Time is flying. And we've added a new element to our shows. A Laugh Riot Doll show before would have 6 female comics, each doing 15 minutes. And these female comics have 3 to 20 years of stand-up experience. Well, what I've incorporated now are 2 slots at 7 minutes apiece for what I'm calling baby dolls. with the Laugh Riot dolls. And these are openings for newer comics to be able to, you know, be booked on shows in clubs and work with comics who've been doing it for a longer amount of time and to be able to showcase their material and hone their craft. So that's really awesome. I'm happy to bring that to the Laugh Riot dolls.
That's really cool. Now, are you guys primarily playing still in the greater Detroit area, or have you been doing any traveling at all? Or
no, but I think the farthest we're going out right now is Commerce. So let's see. We have a show coming up in Berkeley, which is at O'Mara's. That's Friday, September 21st. Then Friday, October 5th, we're going to be at Laugh Tracks in Livonia. And then November 10th, which is a Saturday, we're going to be at the Mad Hatter Pub in Commerce. So I guess that's the farthest we're going out from the Metro Detroit area.
Usually when somebody goes to see comedians, there's a lot of comedians on the bill. And I know, I mean, you guys are sort of a comedy team, but do you like performing with a lot of other comedians on a night? Does everybody always get along? There's never really any competition or rivalry?
Not with the Laugh Riot dolls. I don't feel the competition. I feel like we're having a good time. We enjoy each other. We cheer each other on. You know, if I go out to an open mic, now I feel like there tends to be more competition there, and sometimes they're not as, you know, friendly. They don't really want you to do as well. But when we're all working for the greater good of a show, the feeling is that we're all having a great time. So I would say with, like, open mic performances sometimes within groups, but I have not experienced that at all with the Laugh Riot dolls. We have a great time. We support each other. We want each other to succeed. It's really awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't think that would happen with your group. And what about, do you guys do benefits and things like that as well?
We have some benefits in the past. A while ago now, Joey's in Livonia.
Mm-hmm.
Joey's in Livonia. One of our, I think, our first shows was a benefit. And so what Joey's will do is if you have something that you want to raise money for, you would go to Joey's in Livonia and let them know, and then they would book you on a night, and you would sell the tickets for that night. And it was for, I think, a female charity in the Laugh Riot Dolls. Was the act that the club booked for that charity. So we've done it in that way, kind of, you know, tagging on and helping out the comedy club, but not really building it from scratch yet. And hopefully that's something we'll do sometime soon.
Now, you do a number of things. You have a lot of things going on. I know you're doing voiceovers, and you're also an actress, and you teach at Specs Howard, and you're a traffic reporter. You have a lot of different talents, and you do a lot of different things as an artist. So is comedy your favorite thing to do?
They're all so different. You know, that's a great question. I love them all. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate to have been able to do all of them. But they're all great for their own reasons. You know, like as an example, you know, doing traffic when I'm here by myself, you know, I'll do a great thing and I'll turn around and be like, wasn't that awesome? And there's nobody there to tell me how great I was. Or if I mess up, there's no one there to tell me how terrible I was. So with radio, I don't get that feedback that I get with comedy or that I get with teaching. You know, with teaching, you get like that direct feedback from the students, man. They let you know, how they're feeling all the time. Just like with, you know, an audience. And then it's funny about film. I was, you know, of course, I'm happy to work and I want to work more, so I'm not complaining. But I do want to share that I just read in Russell Brand's My Book You Look Too, he was talking about if you want to work in film, you know, get on a caravan and wake up every morning, put on a bunch of makeup and repeat the same line all day long. And then if you like that, then you'll like working in film. So it's like the process of making films, you know, it's hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. It's really uncomfortable, you know, but it's still awesome because you're working in this medium that, you know, you're excited about and the people that you're working with, you're excited about. So it's all, you know, it's all so different. They all have their awesome points and they all have, you know, their downfalls. I would say, when it's good, comedy is probably the best because, man, there's nothing like that. It's that instant feedback. It's, you know, it's not hurry up and wait. It's you're doing your set, you know, and it's a certain amount of time. And if they're loving it and you're loving it the entire time, it's like, you know, 15 minutes of bliss. And that's awesome. But then it can be really bad. We're at 15 minutes of torture. You know, you just can't wait for it to be over.
Yeah. You, as a female comic, maybe you can tell us a little bit about who you enjoyed as comedians, comics, you know, while you were growing up. And did that tend to be more male or female comics? And do you prefer one over the other, sort of, to watch yourself?
Gosh, that's a good question. I don't think that I prefer one over the other. I think I prefer comics that I relate to.
Sure.
And that being said, maybe I feel like I, you know, relate to women more because I am a woman. But, I mean, growing up, you know, it was Janine Garofalo. But, gosh, I haven't seen any stand-up from her in years. So I don't even know if I would relate to her now, you know. But when I was younger and darker, you know, I really felt like, oh, you know, she was my woman. I don't feel like I relate to Lisa Lampanelli, but I really enjoy her and, like, I think she's very funny. You know, I'm not that kind of comic. I'm not an insult comic, you know.
Right, yeah.
But I do enjoy that. And I absolutely love Ellen DeGeneres. I mean, I would, I think, want to marry her if she wasn't already married. I think she's, like, the most amazing person.
She's a smart comic.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And just a great person. And that's saying a lot, because I'm also not a lesbian.
So, yeah, we better get that in the
yeah, because I want to marry her because she's an awesome person, you know.
Right.
Not because of my sexual preference, but you know. And then, like, God, Mitch Hedberg. I'm so sorry that he died.
Mm-hmm.
Addiction is a terrible thing. He was so funny, so amazing. Cat Williams, absolutely loved him. I wish there was more from him. Yeah. So, you know, it's not, I don't really have, like, you know, pictures of comics on my wall. You know, it's not like that for me.
I wonder how many people have comics all over their walls as opposed to, you know, rock posters and stuff like that.
I don't know. There are, like, people who, maybe not the posters, but, like, I was going to say books. People, like, collect books, I guess, over posters. But
sure.
I do, now that I got my Kindle, man, I have read a ton of books. And a lot of, you know, I read a lot of, you know, comics. When comics write, I get their books. So.
Right. The DVDs, of course, everybody's got a number of stand-up comic DVDs in their collection.
Yeah, I guess we collect things like that as opposed to posters.
Which also,
but I'm a girl. Yeah. So I said the poster reference.
Any plans for actually recording anything, or have you guys done that already? Do you tape your shows at all, like, even to go over them yourselves and things like that, or do you plan on releasing anything in the near future?
I don't have any plans for that. I'm still working on building more time so that I could book myself to be a feature, which would open up for a headliner. So I would have to have 35 minutes, and right now I probably have about a good 20.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it wouldn't be until after that, until after I started booking myself out on my own without a group of girls as a feature, that I would build more to be able to sell CDs at these feature events.
Right, yeah. Lastly, do you have any plans yourself or for the Laugh Riot Dolls to come over to Canada? You haven't performed here, have you?
I have, and it was the worst gig ever for me.
Uh-oh.
So if you know a place, man, it was one of my first gigs. Where was I at? It was a benefit for, gosh, it was Canada. So it was next to, like, some hockey thing. When I went in, there was all these kids playing hockey. Then over to the right, it was this benefit for, I don't know, some sort of, I don't know what they were doing. They were raising money for their group, whatever it was. And it was all older people.
Mm.
And I was just way offensive. They just thought I was the dirtiest thing to come across the border.
Well, I think we have Leo's Comedy Corner over here.
Leo's Comedy Corner, yeah. I haven't pursued that outside of that one time when I got, you know, a friend asked me to come over and do the benefit that he was doing.
Okay.
For whatever group it was, and they hated me. So, yeah, I'll have to come back.
Yeah,
it's gotta be like riding a bike.
Definitely don't blame our, you're obviously probably not in the right environment at the time, but yeah, you should definitely check out Leo's Comedy Corner and just make sure that I know that you're going to be performing here. I don't want to miss it. Of course, no reason I can't get over there to see you perform at some point. So
we have a bridge and a tunnel.
Yeah, well, pretty soon we're gonna have another bridge, aren't we?
Choose your bridge.
Was great to have you on. Thanks for being part of my 100th You Talking to Me show here at CJAM, and it's always a blast having you on.
100, good to be here. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, Heather.
My next guest on the show is somebody that you know. He's a local drummer, Brett LaJoy.
Yep.
And not that long ago, you played with Brett LaJoy for a film, Four on the Floor.
soon to be released in a theater near you.
Yeah.
Next year.
We're hoping. And that's something else that I'm involved in, and was happy to bring you on board to be a part of that film, actually, Four on the Floor, music-related film, and about music as a universal language and showcasing music in Windsor through the past decades.
Yeah, and you're including everybody.
We are leaving
no stone unturned.
Yeah, yeah. This is going to be... this can be an episodic release of some kind, and probably go on for years.
I'm looking very forward to it.
But it's definitely been fun, a labor of love, and I've been happy to include so many great people in the city. There's a lot of talent here.
Oh, sir, ever.
Brett LaJoy is one of those people. Great drummer, local drummer, and took part in the film as well. But Brett is a coach for the Windsor Minor Football Association.
Wow.
Better known as the WMFA.
Say that fast 10 times.
No, thank you. Not on the air. And so he coaches youth teams, and he's here on the special today to share his continued expertise and new experiences teaching kids how to play the game that is football. Brett was last on in 2011. Hey, Brett, welcome back to the show.
Hey, JD, what's going on?
It's great to have you back on the 100th show here, You Talking to Me show at CJAM, to talk about football and the Windsor Minor Football Association. You're coaching, of course. And you've been at it for quite a while, and how long has it been now that you've been coaching, actually?
Oh, I got to be crowding 18, 19 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We got lots of kids. We're just, it's like, it's going to be a great year for us, and can't wait to get going. We've only already been in about 5 practices, so, you know, we're getting our stuff squared away and get ready, because usually when the season starts, it flies by.
Oh, yeah, I bet. And the kids, obviously the kids come and go, and we've talked before about, you know, seeing some of them later. Just wondering if there's any recent, like, you know, success stories of kids that you've coached that have gone on to do some bigger things.
Well, I got Michael Atkinson at Boise State. It's his last year. You know, he's an awesome player. He's got a very good chance of getting drafted. I coached Terrence Crawford, and his brother worked very hard, and he was on TV with the Dallas Cowboys last week. Just want to congratulate him for working hard and really doing the things that took him to get there, because he made it. And, you know, that's a kid from Windsor. He might not have played in Windsor Minor football, but his brother did, and the whole family's full of football. A big amount of support from their mother. And it's just crazy to see some guy, you know, we've had a few guys from Windsor now have some success.
Somebody that I knew, haven't seen for a long time, Rob Bremner, actually, that kind of got you into coaching for this league, right?
Yeah. Just got my nephew into it and going to practice. He was the coach, so we knew all him. Me and you knew him from high school, so he was like, please, Brett, help me. We got 35 kids and 2 of us, so everybody that knows anything about football knows it takes more than that just to coach a football team. So I helped them, and one thing led to another. They had younger kids that played in younger levels, and I took over the team, and that's how it... I never really, you know, thought to get into it, but boy, it's a hard thing to get out of, because it's really got a lot of rewards, and it's a lot of fun. The guys I coach with, Duncan Leo, Troy Holmes, Tom Power, D'Antonio, Tyrone Holmes... I don't know if I forgot anybody, but all those guys helping me out, they all got their heads screwed on straight. They have the right priorities. They're really good with the kids. We have a lot of fun, and we don't put too much pressure on them, because really it's just about learning the game right now. And, you know, high school, they'll have enough pressure on them to do everything. Right now, football should be fun. So that's all I can say is, anybody ever wants to, interested about their kid coming out to play, bring him out to the Fogelaar Furlong Club on any Sunday between 11 and 3, and he can watch his choice of age group play football. And usually when kids watch him play, then they get hooked, because it's just a lot of fun.
You have quite a big team that, I mean, coaches, actually. So, and has it always been like that, or have you gradually got more guys? Because obviously it's a lot to handle, all the kids that you're coaching, right?
For sure it is, and everybody that coaches with me now, I think Duncan's the oldest, like he's been with me the longest, 11 years. Troy, pretty close to that after that. I, you know, most of them guys have been with me a minimum of 5, and it's really, they make my job so much easier. And, you know, if you're in the know in Windsor, you know, every one of those guys knows his part about coaching football. So I'm really blessed right now, and as long as I can ride that wave, I will do it, because we all have the right priority, and, you know, we just have a lot of fun. That's all we can do. I mean, anybody that prevents a kid from playing shouldn't be coaching this level anyways, because it's just about learning.
You also have a website for the Windsor Minor Football Association?
www.wmfa86.com. 1986 is when Windsor Minor was founded.
So anybody that's interested in that can get connected that way. And it was great to have you on, include you again on this special. And thanks for being here, Brett.
Thanks very much, JD. Take care. Right?
All right, we're going to be talking about bikes next.
Bikes next?
More in particular, bicycles. Okay. And even more in particular, for a lack of another word.
Specific.
Specific word?
No, more specific.
Oh, okay. Being more specific, yes, is motored bicycles. And not e-bikes, but motored bicycles.
What?
There's a difference.
Like Vespas?
No, not like Vespas. Not with a body. A Vespa is an actual, well, that's a motored bike, but a Vespa is not a bicycle. A Vespa is a road bike. And then you have the e-bikes that are not a road bike, no license, no insurance, no anything. You know, the e-bikes, and they're kind of covered, you know, like have bodies on them.
They have bodies, for sure.
But that's an e-bike, what they call an e-bike or an electric bike. And this is the same type of thing, but motored bicycles tend to refer to like a mountain bike that somebody's put an electric motor on or a gas motor.
So, yes.
You know what I mean? Not a little bit different than the e-bikes that we think of now that have been kind of commonplace.
But those have been around for a while.
And these, the poor man's e-bike, sort of.
Sure.
But the motors aren't that cheap. But it just would seem like that's the cheaper bike, I guess, because it's kind of homemade, right?
Is it homemade or is this?
They're generally homemade. And my next guest is somebody that was on the show in the past talking about motorbikes, and he builds them.
Oh, he builds them.
Yeah, he's out of BC, builds them. Yeah, builds the custom bikes from, a CCM. Doesn't have to be a mountain bike even, but he prefers that. He says those are pretty much the best bikes to use as a mountain bike. And I last had him on with Tom Noonan from motorbikes.com, which is like a pretty big blog.
Okay.
And, you know, my guest, Mark Elford, he's a motored bicycle builder in BC. He was last on in 2008 with Tom. He's here to update us on what's happening with motored bike building and its popularity. Mark Elford, great to have you back on. Tell us a little bit about the electric bikes, that specifically the ones that you build, actually, and their sole power is battery, non-gas powered, and give us an update on the bikes and what you're doing.
Yeah, I don't do gas powered anymore. I mean, I've fixed a few in the last couple of years, but I don't work on them anymore. It's a waste of time. The government's come down on everybody. Or not the government, but the cops.
Oh, it's a big difference between the electric and the gas?
Yeah, big time. Well, the gas thing, there's no legislation on it. They're fast. They'll go like 30 miles an hour, and the brakes are no good. And there's been people hurt, and actually somebody got killed on one in Vancouver. He got run over by a delivery vehicle, so that was the end of everything right there.
More considered a vehicle when they run on gas?
Well, they can't be considered a vehicle because you can't... Well, I mean, I had one safetied and put on the road, but it was kind of a sham. I did it Kramer style.
And I want to ask you about suppliers. I know last time when you were on the show, you were getting motors from China, I guess it was.
Yeah, I was getting motors from China, and then Staten. Staten was a big supplier, and he still is. There's hundreds of them now. There used to be maybe three or four when I started this about 7 years ago, 8 years ago. Yeah. Well, actually, it's been actually 8 or 9 years, maybe. Eight? I don't know. Well, no, it's been longer than that. Christ, I was building them when I was living in Ontario. Fuck. It's been 15 years, maybe.
Now, the bikes you build, are you usually using a mountain bike or an older type bike? I mean, even sometimes antique bikes you use, which is, very different than the e-bikes, you know, which might roll through a lot of people's minds now, the bigger, fatter, new plasticky type e-bike that looks like a scooter or whatnot. And how do you find the comparison between the type that you build using a bicycle compared to these other e-bikes?
Well, the e-bikes that you can buy in a store, the least expensive one would be about $3,200, and you'll get possibly from the Ambassador Bridge to Tecumseh and like the East End, on maybe almost a half a charge. Like, you'll be half out of your battery by the time you get there. And that's for a $3,200 e-bike.
Now, is that because of the size of the regular e-bikes are so big, and the, you know, the ones that you build are pretty streamlined, using a bicycle, obviously?
Yeah. But yeah, those scooters that they have that look like 50cc scooters, they're right. Electric. Those things are, they're brilliant. They're bad. The only time you see one that's always on the road, they've actually upgraded the batteries and the controller. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't usually do very well. Those, I mean, they're $800 to $1,000 at Walmart everywhere, or you can buy them anywhere.
What's the best bicycle, in your opinion, to start with, you know, to put a motor on and build an e-bike?
Oh, geez. I would say a mountain bike, a good dual suspension mountain bike. Yeah, and then you can buy a kit that's specific for the bicycle. Like, it would have 135mm dropouts in the back. Or you can put them on the front, as long as it's not an aluminum forked bicycle, because the electric motors have tons of torque right from the get-go. They don't pick up speed like a gas motor. They're just all torque.
Oh, right. Yeah, the power is right there.
Yeah, yeah. So it doesn't matter what's going on, but a lot of people have broken aluminum front forks. Like, a cheap bomber suspension on a mountain bike won't hold a Crystalite front wheel hub. They won't do it. Electric bikes, unless you're running 24 volts and you're very careful with it, or you put axle torque arms on it on both sides, which is very difficult. You want the wheel on the back, and you usually want your battery in the front under the handlebars in a basket or in the triangle frame for an electric bike to distribute the weight.
And what about laws over the years, you know, since we've talked to you? Have they changed much for the electric bikes, at least in your area especially?
No, nothing has. No, I'm serious, nothing has. You're not allowed to ride a bicycle with a gas motor on it, period.
And do the laws differ in any way for the types of bikes that you build, the electric bicycle, as opposed to the e-bikes that, you know, a lot of people are kind of familiar with these days?
Those are against government legislation. Like, they tell them they have to be under 250 watts or 500 watts. I think Ontario is 800 watts still. I'm not sure. Might be 500, but it started up at 750 or 800 watts.
When you were on the show last time, I also had Tom Noonan on from motoredbikes.com, I believe was the name of the forum. Is that still running?
He's still doing it. They're pretty big there now. Oh, yeah. I tell people to go to endlesssphere.com. That's an electric bike forum. There's no bullshit there. They tell it like it is. You can learn everything about an electric bike at endlesssphere.com.
Oh, great. Thanks for the website tip there. And it was great having you back on, you talking to me. Thanks, Mark.
Okay. See ya.
If you have an interesting career or an interesting life experience that you'd like to share with others, you can contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking to Me website, youtalkingtome.ca. That's the letter U, talking the number 2, me, youtalkingtome.ca.
Hi there, this is Carol and Mark, and you're listening to CJAM, CJAM, Windsor, Detroit.
Down in Death Valley on the day of the dead, at the lowest point in North America.
And my next guest is, this is kind of fun, and I like these topics, and I've had the occasional psychic on the show, you know, somebody talk about the paranormal and things like that, UFOs and...
I love that stuff.
My guest, James O'Connor, was last on the show in 2007, so that's way back, and here with us to give us an update on the 100th You Talking to Me show. And he's had a lot of experience with ghosts and unexplained phenomena and things, and he's also into weather manipulation,
controversial
black
stuff.
Ops, and yeah,
conspiracy
exactly.
Theories.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I say, back in 2007, he was on the show and shared all kinds of stories, and let's get an update from James. James, welcome back to You Talking to Me.
Hi, Big JD. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's great to have you on again. It's been a while since we last had you on the show, and that was definitely a fun show. Always like talking about these types of things, these strange happenings and paranormal activity and things like that. And want to start things off by asking you a little bit about HARP, because we want to talk a little bit about, you know, weather manipulation and what's happening with the whole, I guess, Al Gore thing, global warming, and HAARP, of course, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. That's a double A in there, right?
Yeah, you're right. Well, I think one of the first things I'd like to start off is with Al Gore. Al Gore won the Nobel Peace Prize based on climate and the devastating effects that it's about to happen to us. And it's on there, and I'd like people to listen to it. But one of the things he said was, we the human species are confronting a planetary emergency, a threat to the survival of our civilization that is gathering ominous and destructive potential. Years ago, I was taught a number of things, and one of them happened to be HAARP. What I was taught about HAARP was that they use extremely high frequencies to heat the ionosphere. And what happens is, when they heat the ionosphere with that type of energy, it causes a bubble or a lens. It causes the ionosphere in that area to kind of expand like plastic, and it causes a huge lens. And with this lens, what they do is they use microwaves, and they bounce it off of that, kind of put it in a simple way. And they decided to do this, one, because it was an enormous amount of natural gas under the northern slope in Alaska that they couldn't use. It wasn't financially feasible to have that piped into anywhere in the United States or Canada, so they had a good reason to use it, because they could melt the ice cap and they could melt the ice shelf on Greenland. And by doing so, they opened up not only a northwest passage for shipping, but they also opened up the ability to explore Greenland and the northern part of Canada for oil prospects, I guess would be the word. And, you know, HAARP has a great potential. It's even used here in Windsor. I think if you go online, you see a lot of times where they advertise solar power and how the government of Canada is supporting that, and they're trying to get people here in Windsor to put up, you know, massive farms of solar power. And as much as HAARP has the ability to melt ice in the north, it also has the ability to create sunshine. And the only way I can explain it is the Environment Minister, Gord Miller, came here, and he was explaining how extreme weather is the norm. He doesn't want people to know about HAARP just yet, because there are a lot of people that will complain about it. But he did this after there was, I think, 20,000 people then complaining about a low-frequency emission over Zug Island. So he come down to try and let people know and try to break it to people gently that, you know, yeah, our weather is about to change. It's about to change drastically. A lot of these species of trees and animals and the things that normally survive here won't be able to survive here, because we're going to start having weather somewhat like Florida. And, you know, the nice thing about HAARP, it has the potential to create sunshine all the time. And so we are about to experience warm climate here. You know, like years ago, riding a bike or owning a sports car, it was kind of like 50-50, because you only got to drive these vehicles, you know, half the year.
Or us motorcycle riders.
Yeah, we're paying insurance for a whole year and only getting to ride the bike half a year.
Right, right.
And I think last winter was a real good example of the type of effect that HAARP is going to have on us. You know, like a lot of people, even myself, a major panic attack when you're seeing, you know, the ice cap in Greenland melting, because that's going to raise our ocean levels up. I'm going to say 24 feet is what I was told. I don't know the exact amount.
That's pretty high.
It's going to end up flooding the Lake of Holland and, you know, let's say
right,
Florida, any country that's low level. But at the same time, you know, like it's unfortunate. We have, 7 billion people on the planet at the moment, and we need the natural resources. So, you know, it's kind of like the pipeline from Fort McMurray to Vancouver and to China. You know, I know it's an environmental hazard, but without these things, you know, mankind has to decline. So you have to make a balance on it.
I want to ask you now a little bit about the manned flight to Mars. What's up with that?
Well, again, it gives a lot of credibility to science and government that they're looking forward to our future, you know, 50 and 60 years in advance. Because once again, I knew about the manned flight to Mars, and although they haven't put it out there yet, like they're planning on building a platform just outside of Earth's orbit, and they're going to use heavy lift rockets to, you know, bring sections of the spacecraft up into orbit, and they're going to assemble them there. Again, they're going to use people of smaller stature, rather not miniature dwarfs, but people that are anatomically correct, but smaller in size, because, you know, it's like 900 days to get there, and, you know, food and shelter and everything else, they want to a minimum so they can keep the spacecraft size to a minimum. Mm-hmm. And they're planning to put people up there for 100 years.
Would you go?
No, I wouldn't. No, I don't think I'd be a candidate for it. I'm too tall, and I'm too old, most likely. But, yeah, so, like, all these things are happening in the world, and it is a great thing that, science and the government are that far ahead. I mean, like, I was taught things like, you know, we look up into the night sky and you look at a star. I think the furthest one is, like, 2.5 million light years away. And I remember as a kid, you know, they could say, well, you're looking back into the past. And in reality, that's not true, and I think most people argue with me because of the speed of light, but there are other things that are involved that mankind isn't aware of yet. But I was taught these things back then. It's kind of like a black hole. You know, like there's always, you go online and you'll see artist illustrations, and it all has to do with myths and fantasies and how these black holes are eating stars, and how these black holes, you know, allow into a different dimension. And these things just aren't true. I'd really like to do a show on that alone, because I think that's pretty cool. That's the knowledge I have on that alone.
I'm very much looking forward to getting you back on the show and talk about these things in greater detail, and definitely the black hole thing, because that's of a lot of interest to a lot of people. And then there's, of course, a lot of people that don't really get it or not even aware of it, perhaps. But also, of course, at a university radio station, that's always fun topics about, you know, science and space and things like that. So, but it was definitely great having you back on to give us a little update of what you've been researching lately. And we'll definitely get you back on the show for a full You Talking to Me show. It was great to have you on the You Talking to Me special, 100th show here at CJAM.
Congratulations on the 100th show. Awesome. And thanks very much, Big JD.
All right. Thanks, James. My next guest is rock and roll related. You like rock and roll?
I like Thin Lizzy, so I must like rock and roll.
All right. Rock writer Alan Williams runs the Chambers of Rock blog based in Michigan. He's a world of knowledge when it comes to rock, and he's interviewed many national artists in the rock world, including Michael Schenker.
Of the Michael Schenker Group.
Mm-hmm.
Was he in the Scorpions?
He was in the Scorpions.
Okay, yeah.
On the first Scorpions album, which is amazing. It was very cool. Very Black Sabbath-ish guitar playing by him on there.
Oh, really?
At 16 years old or something.
Oh, crazy.
16, 17 years old. And then I think he may have been on the second Scorpions album, but he definitely wrote some of the tunes on there. His name's on there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not 100% sure if he was actually on them or what. But and Ian Gillan, he's interviewed.
Deep Purple.
And even our own Triumph.
Your own Triumph?
Our own.
As
Canada's
own. Canada's own.
Triumph.
Yeah.
We can't do today's special without a little rock talk.
Let's do it.
Alan Williams, welcome back to You Talking to Me.
Hey, good to talk to you again, Jetty.
Yeah, it's great to have you on my 100th show special.
Yeah.
We're going to obviously talk about rock and roll. What's happening with the blog? Any updates as far as the site?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's had a bit of a lull because of the summertime. People away on vacation. But it's already picking up again, so it's nice to see. I've got an interview coming up pretty soon here with Rick Emmett from Triumph, so I'm looking forward to that.
Very cool. And did you talk to Rick before, or have you talked to the other guys in the band?
I've spoken to Gil Moore before in an interview that's been published on the site. I did speak to Rick some years ago. We did an interview, and unfortunately it wasn't published. It was just one of the other sites that I used to write for.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, it just didn't come off. So very strange, but there you go. So I felt that I owed it to Rick to put the record straight. And I'm doing a fresh interview with Rick, and that should go up on Chambers of Rock as soon as it can.
That's cool. Canadian band, of course. And it's always nice to hear that you cover a little of that as well. Most of the, obviously a lot of big national bands come out of the U.S. Not that Canada doesn't have its share of good talent, but I think that we're sometimes shadowed by the U.S., so it's cool that gets covered. And as well, English bands I mean, there's a lot of great English bands, and I would mention Alippo just before talking to you that you had talked to Ian Gillan and probably a number of others. And that was something that you were talking about last time when you were on the show was Mick Box.
I interviewed Mick Box some time back for when I used to write for About.com.
Okay.
There's a classic rock section there, and I interviewed Mick, and smashing guy to talk to. We were supposed to do a fresh interview last year, but with the tour schedule that he was on, it just got kind of crazy, and we never managed to hook up. Just our schedules didn't collide, you know, it didn't meet at the same time. So we owe each other another chat, so I'm sure it will happen soon.
Well, what else is in the news recently as far as news or new releases coming?
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to know that the guys in Thin Lizzy are back in the recording studio, so I'm looking forward to talking to Scott Gorham as soon as that comes a little bit more, you know, closer to fruition. And this past Saturday evening, I caught Cinderella with Bastian Bach and Lynch Mob. Very good show up at Pine Knob.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I hadn't heard a couple of those names for a while, and it's cool that some of these 80s bands are still touring around, I guess, eh?
Absolutely, yeah. They put on a great show. I mean, since both sets seemed to be cut short, they actually had five bands on the bill. They had John Corobi, who used to be with Motley Crue after Vince Neil left. Mm-hmm. And Enough's Enough. It was good. We actually only caught from the Lynch Mob set. We caught the tail end of Enough's Enough.
So when you go to the concerts in Detroit, do you get a chance to, or do you usually try to talk to somebody when you can, or do you sometimes just want to kind of kick back and watch the show and not have to necessarily do an interview and prepare for that and everything?
Right. It kind of gets a little tricky sometimes time-wise and everything because you're kind of running back and forth. And it's like when I caught Michael Schenker at Harpo's earlier this year, I actually managed to track him down for an interview. And unfortunately, we were in a dressing room at the back of the venue. And by the time he'd finished doing his sound check, the Sopranos support acts was on stage trying to do their sound check. And it was a very, very difficult interview. I could see Michael getting very frustrated. It was just a bad situation to try and do an interview in. Probably would have been better to do a corner with him. So just unfortunate circumstance in that case. It was a soundproof room, just loads of sound in the background, and very tough to do.
Now, you obviously get a chance to talk to a lot of big bands, a lot of cool people. Are there any newer bands that you see that come out on occasion that you think, wow, I'd really like to talk to this band, find out more about them, and kind of find out what makes guys tick and that kind of thing? Are there any new or up and coming bands that you've taken any interest in?
Well, newer. Well, I guess when you think that I cover a lot of classic rock.
Yeah,
I love Shinedown. Shinedown's a great newer band, if you will. Mm-hmm. They're probably not really classic rock. I mean, they're more kind of hard rock, but they have a slight commercial slant. When you think, as I say, you know, I cover mostly like the classic rock acts from the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. From the acts that have come out of the 90s and the 2000s, the Millennium Mirror, if you will. I love Three Doors Down. I think they're a great act. I'd love to sort of hook up with those guys, put some of those guys, and again, Shinedown is a great newer act. Other than that, I get so many CDs to listen to. It's tough to try and pick something out really right now.
Oh yeah, I bet. I wanted to ask you about the Sweet Thing. What was it? Rock at the Riverfront?
Yeah, Rock in the Riverfront. Yeah, they had the Tubes as the US say. In England, we actually say the Tubes. That's an interesting one for you. it always gives people a chuckle over here in the States when I talk about the Tubes, but when I talk to people back home in England, that's what I say.
The Tubes.
The Tubes, as the Americans say, they were very good, very good. I guess Fee Wavell was kind of struggling on some of the higher notes, but it's still a good show. He puts all the outfits on and everything, and he really plays a part. It's quite entertaining. Mm-hmm.
And then The Suite came out, and they put on a great show. I mean, it's the U.S. version of The Suite. There's only two original members left alive. Brian Connolly sadly passed away, the original vocalist, and Mick Tucker, the original drummer, passed away. So now the only two surviving members of the classic lineup of Suite are Steve Priest, bassist vocalist, and Andy Scott. Now, Andy Scott has a U.K. version of The Suite. So I can only really typically see U.S. version. It's very impressive, but sadly, they've had this lineup together for about 4 years. Stuart Smith has actually just decided to quit The Suite and focus on his Heaven and Earth project, which is a very good one. And a new album is in the work from Heaven and Earth, and I'm looking forward to talking to Stuart about that as soon as that comes close to being released. Stuart Smith is a fantastic guitarist. If you like Deep Purple, Uriah Heep, classic rock style of that kind, and chances are you'll probably love Heaven and Earth. He's had some great vocalists and great musicians play on his previous Heaven and Earth albums, so it's well worth checking out.
I just want to ask you what your take is on, you know, when bands keep going along after their major success and maybe one guy left in the band, a couple guys. Does that bother you at all when they keep it going, or would you still prefer that they do so that you can still see some of the any or one or two of the original guys that are still playing?
Well, it's a tough call. It really is a tough call. I mean, a lot of the diehards of fans of Thin Lizzy have said the same thing, that basically Phil Lynott made Thin Lizzy. But, you know, you can look at bands like AC/DC. You know, when Bon Scott passed away, who thought that Brian Johnson could ever replace Bon Scott? But he did it. And basically he's carried it off very, very well. AC/DC have probably been, you know, more successful than they ever were with Bon Scott, which is kind of ironic because, you know, Bon Scott was pretty unique. Thin Lizzy, they've really got a good sound, and I think Ricky on vocals there, and he plays some guitar too. I think he's a great front man for the band. And although he's not actually Irish, he's Scottish. So he's got a Scottish Celtic in him. And it's great. It's a great lineup. And it's good to see Brian Downey back in the band, Darren Walton on keyboards, and, of course, Scott Gorham. So, you know, I think that's good. I think it's a good lineup. And it's a tough call, as I say, JD, to be honest. I think, you know, there's a lot of acts out there that sound terrible. I mean, it's funny, Head East was a band that I kind of liked for a number of songs, but I hear that a lot of these days they just really don't cut the mustard. But I can't comment because I've never seen them. So it's, as I say, it's a tough call. The Suite, they've got a great lineup. They've got some great musicians in the band. They all play very well. They perform the songs very well. So from that standpoint, I think if the band can pull it off and they sound authentic enough, I think it's great for the fans. I mean, that's my personal take on it. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of tough. It does seem tough to justify there's only one original member still in the band, you know?
Has there been an update lately on the whole Black Sabbath thing and Tony Iommi?
That's something that kind of troubles me a little bit, because it seems to be the same way as it was when Ronnie James Dio got sick. You know, when he was sick, you'd hear snippets and you started to hear so many positive things about he's getting treatment now. You know, he's up about everything. He's looking forward to getting out on the road again. And then, of course, next thing we know, Ronnie's winning his battle. So that was pretty sad. And then, of course, we heard that Tony Iommi, you know, was diagnosed with lymphoma, was having cancer treatment. But there's been very, very few updates. So from that standpoint, it's like I hope they're not covering stuff up. I guess on a positive note, the fact that they came over and Tony Iommi flew over to the States to play the Lollapalooza festival was a good sign.
Right. Yeah, well, we certainly all hope for the best there.
Right.
I just had one more question for you. Who was your, or what you consider to be your first interview?
My first interview? Wow. I think it was probably Steve Lukather, Toto.
Okay.
And ironically, I'm actually going back and forth with David Page. I'm trying to wrap up the interview that we did earlier this year. He's touring Europe right now. And David Page, the keyboard player, vocalist in Toto, he's looking over the interview, making sure he gives it his blessing. I'm sure it will be on the site soon.
Great. Well, we'll be looking forward to that. And, of course, the Rick Emmett interview. And really thank you for taking the time to be on this You Talking to Me special.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on 100 shows, man. That's pretty cool. Special shows.
All right. Thanks, Alan, and best wishes with Chambers of Rock.
Thanks, man. All the best, JD.
you have an interesting career? You have an interesting life experience to share with others. If you'd like to be a guest on You Talking to Me, contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking to Me website. That's youtalkingtome.ca. The letter U, talking, the number two, me, youtalkingtome.ca.
And hey, everybody, keep in mind that the podcast for this week's show will contain extra content. Obviously, on air, we're a little more pressed for time than the podcast, so we included the extra content from the interviews that we couldn't fit into the live show. Just visit the You Talking to Me website. That's the letter U, talking, the number two, me.ca, and go to the podcast page there. And there you'll find a link to the show's RSS feed, and you'll find all the list of shows there, and you can listen to all the past shows and definitely the longer 100th You Talking to Me special.
Everybody, we just brought the moon over the mountain.
Hello, Ma. Hello, Pa. It wasn't much of a fight. I stood right there, but not for long.
Quiet. This broadcast is coming to you through the courtesy of
99.1 FM, CJAM, redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit.
Are you listening? Now, don't go away, ladies and gentlemen. We'll soon be with you. Boom. Cuckoo.
One of my favorite guests ever that was on the show back in 2008. It was pre-CJAM, but I think I've rebroadcast that show on since I've been here at CJAM and have been here for 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Thus the, well, it's the 100th show here at CJAM, but there's actually been, 104 shows, I guess that would be, but a few have been rebroadcast, so these are like...
Well, there's the Pledge Week as well, so you're not...
Right, Pledge Week, but it was still, that was still a unique show,
sure.
I'll say. Like, yeah. You know, still 100 unique shows, and if you really want to get technical, next week may be that, but I think this was the closest week to my second anniversary here at CJAM.
Well, happy anniversary.
Well, thank you very much. And you talking to me, of course, winning the CJAM Jammy Award 2 years in a row.
For what category?
2011-2012 for the best spoken word program.
Very good. Well deserved.
Thank you very much. So my guest, Paul Howard, is the son of Mo from The Three Stooges. Obviously, you love The Three Stooges.
We do. Did you see the new movie? The movie, The Three Stooges?
I did get a chance to see the movie.
Okay, and your impressions?
My impressions was it's not bad. I'm looking forward to having the film so that I can turn the color off and watch it in black and white and see what I think about.
There you go. Awesome. The
new movie.
You have the technology to do that, do you? Erase the color?
I will somehow on the computer or something. Oh, yeah, I can still do it on the TV. Turn it down. When you just said that, I'm like, I don't know. Do I? Because I still think of TV sometimes in terms of, and when I think of black and white or black and white TV, of knobs and turn the color down, turn it off. And I had to think for a second. Yeah, okay, I can do that with the remote control. I can go to the color and...
Sure, of course.
Yeah, but that's how we do everything now. There's no real controls on the TVs these days, really.
No. There's a lack of knobs.
Yeah. So finally, today, You Talking to Me is 100th show here at CJAM. Paul Howard, son of Mo from The Three Stooges, back on the show. He was last on in 2008, and I've had the pleasure of hanging out with Paul a number of times since then in his hometown of New York. And it's always fun to hang out with Paul, listen to stories about the Stooges, especially home life. He likes to talk a lot about Stooges' home life and
that's
his dad. And,
very cool.
You know, it is. Especially, of course, his dad, Mo. The man who grew up with Uncles Shemp and Curly joins us now with an update on what's happening in Stoogeville and also an update on caricature artistry, as Paul is a professional caricature artist.
He's awesome.
All right, Paul, it's great to have you back on the show.
Big JD, it's wonderful to be here. I'm looking forward to you firing questions at me, and I'll do my best to answer them.
All right. It's been a while since we had you on the show, so I'm sure there's a few updates on things. And I know just recently you were actually on one of the television show, morning shows, with your sister, right?
Yes, that's correct. The shows were a half hour, and I think I was on for about 30 seconds. So I didn't occupy a big time frame, but it was still really kind of neat. It was the CBS channel Sunday morning, something like that, with Charles Osgood. It was a wonderful, wonderful production, the whole program of which the Stooges were a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have to get used to looking at myself on a screen like that. So I started you know, being too critical, but that's just my problem. Anyway, I was also on another program, I forget what it was, another television outlet. So it was precipitated by the movie that was out a couple of months ago, a comedy written and produced by the Farrelly brothers. And so that generated the interview. And yeah, Joan was on it too. And I thought it was a great, at least the one from CBS was a wonderful production.
Yeah, I got to see them. They were great. But what were your thoughts on the new Stooges movie?
There were some sight gags that I saw that I thought were very funny. I was really, really, really laughing. I'm not intimately familiar with the Farrelly brothers, but I'm, you know, I've heard that, you know, they're restricted to a certain younger age group. Sometimes the content can get a little, you know, raunchy a little bit, so I'm told. And it was funny. But I was always thrown back to, there's nothing like the originals, and there's nothing will be like the originals. But the other piece, the thought that I had was, you know, anytime the Three Stooges are mentioned, whether it's in a an interview or whether it's a movie or whatever medium, it's just wonderful because it helps to keep them in the public eye that much more.
Sure.
If I was in school and this was a class I was taking and I was a teacher, I would grade it a B minus.
Mm-hmm.
If that means anything in Canada or other places.
It's pretty much the same over here. I know I was talking to you recently. One thing that I was pleasantly surprised kind of to see actually in that film, and I know I was talking about this to you recently when we were in New York together. It was great to see you, by the way, again.
Yeah, same here.
It was about the use of the dummies. You know, how they fall and they use the dummies to land on the ground and then the Stooges get back up. So I was glad they at least put something like that in it. How about the Stoogium? Anything recent going on with the Stoogium?
Well, there are a few particulars. The owner-creator, Gary Lassen, by the way, which this is just a wonderful, wonderful thing that he did. It's his own project. He has kept the visiting hours very restricted. I think he's opening them up a little bit now, but you have to go to, I guess it's stoogium.com or something
That's
like
right.
that.
That's right, it is, yeah.
To kind of keep up on that. I've gone there every single year for the last 25 years, mm-hmm. and it's been great. It gets better every year. But after 2013, they're going to into operation and keep it open only every other year. That's what I understand.
Oh, wow.
I guess he feels that, you know, there's just plenty of other Stooges activities and, you know, having it every year kind of maybe for him is a little too much, but it'll certainly continue, which is the important thing.
Well, I'm sure there's been some conventions over the, I mean, the last time you were on, you talking to me actually was in 2008. So there must've been some pretty big conventions and things like that through the last few years as well.
Well, I don't follow that. However, I personally went to, it's kind of an interesting story. I was asked to do my presentation at a movie theater in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, which I did, and which was a lot of fun. And I think the fans appreciated it. And my wife had a reunion with a cousin that she hadn't seen in 30 years in that lived in that same town. They had come from, I believe, South America, actually. They had lived there a long time and moved to Chapel Hill. So it was a wonderful opportunity to share my life with the fans and also meet Joanne's first cousin for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
They constantly add things in the Stoogium. There's one thing that always strikes me, and that is they have an interactive game that they somehow created. You go up to an image of Curly's face on this machine, full-size face, just his face, in order to get the game going, you have to poke them with two fingers in the eyes, which is such a kick. Lots of creative stuff like that at the Stoogium. So they're constantly adding things that I've seen, things that I haven't seen.
Well, that's good. Yeah. And again, that's Stoogium.com for anybody that wants to check that out. Wanted to get an update on caricatures by Paul. What's happening there?
I do and have done, I guess, for the last 8 or 9 years. I'm a professional caricaturist. I work in two venues. I go away to events, to parties, to conventions, whatever it might be. And then I also do them for photographs from people that send me their photos, and we discuss a situation that they'd like to be in. It's a much more detailed execution. Mm-hmm. And I get requests from all over the world. It's actually it's stunning, you know, when you do it through the internet. So, you know, that's how I operate. And I'm always willing to chat with someone about a possible job. And I am at Paul's, P-A-U-L-S, Caricatures, C-A-R-I-C-A-T-U-R-E-S, at gmail.com.
Great. And the website as well is caricaturesbypaul.com.
Oh, yeah. Paul's Caricatures is the email address. Caricaturesbypaul.com. is my website, of which in another month I'll be adding more caricatures to it. Yeah, so it's tricky. The word caricatures is C-A-R, not C-H. So that occupies a fair amount of my time. And another, more activities now that I think of it, is my sister has written her memoir, being the daughter of Mo, of course, and her life as it connects with the Stooges, with wonderful stories. I even add a few stories of my own in her book. She's looking for a publisher. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's a proposed title is called Stooge Time. My father's very successful autobiography that came out in 1977 is being republished as we speak. I don't know when it's going to be on bookshelves yet. And that's called Mo Howard and the Three Stooges. So there's, you know, a bunch of Stooge-related activities that's just been completed or will be coming very soon.
And those things are never going to die. You know that.
That's right. That is right, Big JD. They never go away. I just opened a photograph this morning, one of a guy that came to the convention. He had Stooges tattoos all over his body.
Oh, wow.
I mean, on his legs, on his chest, on his shoulder. I mean, that's dedication.
Sure, sure. Well, it was great to have you back on the show, Paul. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on again, especially on my 100th You Talking to Me show here at CJM. It's you know, I want to make sure you're included in this.
It's my pleasure, Big JD. It's really always great to be here with you and to see you when you come into New York on occasion. And, you know, I just want to keep passing the torch. Just want to keep passing the torch to the Stooge fans. They're wonderful.
Thanks again, Paul.
Finally.
That's the end of today's show. It was very cool of CGM station manager Vern Smith and also program director Sarah Morris to accommodate You Talking to Me being on for 1 hour today.
Big JD gets a whole hour and a well-deserved hour, I might add.
Thanks. And it was, again, my pleasure having you on to co-host the show today.
Well, thanks for having me, Big JD. Maybe we can do it again for the 200th show.
I'm sure we will.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for being on, Lippo. And thanks, everybody, for listening to the show this week. I hope you enjoyed all the past guests that were brought back on. And I'll see everybody next week here on You Talking to Me. I'm Big JD. Thanks for listening.